far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we review Marvel's Black Panther.
Okay, let the queen speak now.
All right, queen.
Okay, I love you all.
Do you know the way?
To go to work or something. I don't know. Maybe he has different shifts at the casinos on different days. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess his shifts change so much, so there's no point in telling us like when he's online unless he's like, yeah, I'm at work. I can't really do whatever you guys are talking about right now or whatever.
I thought it was funny. He said that someone was trying to gamble with Bitcoin.
I was just thinking that.
That was hilarious to me.
Like, his response was just
don't have a physical coin. You can't put it in the slot machine. It's stupid.
Yeah. He just said he just laughed and then shook his head like, you freaking idiot.
Yeah.
Alright, are we ready for Wakanda Radio?
Yeah.
Hello, do you know the way to Wakanda? Wakanda Radio. What? Who is the queen? There can only be one queen of Wakanda. And we're going to be called racist for making fun of the Uganda Knuckles video, which was already making fun of Uganda, which no one in Uganda had a problem with that video.
that video is like, they're using quotes from an actual movie made in Uganda.
Yeah, and the movie was, from what I heard, was done on a $200 budget. And boy, is it really something.
Did you see the whole movie, or?
No, just clips of it that people have, like, put together. It's like they did, like, an abridged version of it, and I was like, this looks amazing.
I saw, like, a 10-minute version, and it was, like, I think it was called, like, Captain Alex narration or something.
It was like, who killed Captain Alex is what it was.
Yeah, but the one that I saw was, like, they had all the parts where the narrator starts shouting out random nonsense during the movie. And it was, like, just those clips, and it was, like, he's the weirdest narrator I've ever heard. He just starts yelling out random English phrases that don't have anything to do with the plot.
Alright, so, yeah, we haven't recorded in like a month, man.
Mm-hmm. We did a State of the Union, Gundam Wing was the last time.
Yeah, which was basically our Valentine's. Yeah, we didn't bother a Valentine's Day episode this year.
Oh, that's come and gone.
Yeah, it's too late now. I mean, the Gundam Wing episode is basically the Valentine's Day one. My bad. Sorry, sure. Guys, we really dropped the ball there.
We don't have to have an episode of every holiday.
Yeah, I mean, there was probably some really good stuff we could have talked about, like, with romance plots, but I couldn't do it. I mean,
we could have had Stacey review Junjo Romantica for us.
Oh, jeez. I mean, I was thinking, like, Revolutionary Girl Utena could have been a good one, but I didn't have the time to put...
No, I forgot we even had that.
I
didn't watch any of it yet.
No, me either. Like, I got through Wing, and I was good with that. And
yeah. But we're going to talk about a topical thing relating to the month of February now, which was Black History Month. So we're going to talk about Black Panther, the revolutionary first black superhero movie, other than like the 20 other ones that were already made.
Yeah, because let's see, Blank Man, Meteor Man, Blade, Steel, Falcon guy.
Probably
some.
You mean in Captain America?
Yeah. Probably a couple other black superheroes were missing out. Those don't compare to Black Panther, because Black Panther is really, after all of those movies, we finally get a real black superhero movie.
Yeah, so I was looking this up the other day. There was like a list of superhero movies on Wikipedia, and there was one from 1970. Oh, I gotta look it up now.
Okay.
But it's called The First Black Superman, and it's from the mid-70s, mm-hmm. 1937.
Yeah.
Avar, The First Black Superman. So this is something that was predated by 40 years, and they described it as a blaxploitation movie, because any movie that came out in the 70s with black actors is called blaxploitation.
Makes sense.
They wouldn't call this blaxploitation. Even though there's probably not that much difference between this and the other one. I don't know. I guess this is made on a much higher budget, though. This is a big budget superhero Marvel movie from Disney, which I guess is why they're calling it historic, but it involves black people. Or, I don't know. First Marvel Cinematic Universe movie with a black main lead actor. If you want to be like really specific about first black this, first black that, you have to put like 15 different adjectives for it to be historic. But
yeah,
but I guess you can do it, and people did.
Well, I mean, I remember like, I think it was CBS or ABC or NBC or whatever was like mentioning like this, the cover thing for Black Panther. And they're like, and in their words, like, this is the first real like black superhero movie we've ever gotten. It was like on their words on national TV during the news hour. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, where were you 20 years ago when we had all these black superhero movies that came out? Now, granted, they weren't maybe
Spawn,
that good. Yes, Spawn
Bill
is another.
And
yeah.
So many different.
Yes, Hancock and Spawn were the other two I forgot about. And I remember seeing Hancock in theaters. I didn't think much of it, but. Yeah, like where were those guys in the past 20 years when all these black superhero movies came out and no one really cared?
And Catwoman, don't forget Catwoman.
Is Catwoman's not really a superhero though? I mean, she's a
supervillain, I guess.
Antagonist, sort of. Like, she's not really a
superhero. But in that one, she was good.
Yeah, that movie's not even. Yeah, like I think
I'm not
even,
saying the movie is good, but I'm saying in the movie she's not portrayed as evil.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know they made a video game for it, too, which I don't think was that good either.
They made a video game for every superhero movie back then. And, yeah, they were always regarded as crap.
Yeah, I mean, just about.
Other than, like, Spider-Man 2. Those were a little bit better, but, I mean, in general, movie games are not well regarded.
Yeah, that's true. Oh yeah, introduction. So this is the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, where this time we're going to talk about Marvel movies again, as usually when these things come out. So you're going to get about four more Marvel movie reviews this year, because we got freaking Avengers Infinity War. I thought there was three others.
There's Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, that's the other one.
And then Captain Marvel comes out early next year.
Okay.
And then Avengers, I don't even think they pronounced the subtitle for it, but Avengers 4 is going to come out next year also. They're going to have 2 years in a row with Avengers movies.
Well, yeah, they're splitting up Infinity War. They're splitting up Infinity War into two parts, so that's why it's going to be like 3 and 4 or whatever the heck you want to call it.
Yeah, and for a while they're going to call it like Infinity War Part 1 and Infinity War Part 2, but now they're saying like, oh, it's going to be called something else, but we don't know what it's going to be called. It's probably going to be like revealed at the end of Infinity War, like they'll say, the Avengers will be back in whatever the name of the next one is.
Yeah.
Because that's at the end of every movie of these Marvel movies, like how they always say James Bond will return in the name of the next movie. And I think there was one in the 70s where they got the name wrong, and it was like, they put out another one before they adapted that Fleming book. But in general, they had like the name of what the next James Bond movie would be. And so at the end of this Black Panther, they said, Black Panther will be back in Avengers Infinity War. And so,
yeah.
So this is to hype that up. And so they had Bucky show up at the end and,
yeah.
That was to hype it up too, but mostly this was kind of unconnected to the whole Avengers thing. Like, yeah, it's definitely cameos.
It's definitely its own side story. We never introduced ourselves, so I'm Dustin and you're John.
Right.
So we got that out of the way, in case anybody's listened to us for the first time, God willing.
Any first-time listeners probably turn it off after the Uganda Knuckles part.
Yeah, oh my gosh, these showing their white, these people sound way too white to white up this whitish podcast. Making fun of Uganda Knuckles, which is what everyone makes fun of, both black and white people, or whatever, I don't know.
If you're the kind of person who gets offended by Uganda Knuckles, like Viku or whatever, and you're going to be triggered by politically incorrect humor or whatever, don't listen. We're not the podcast for you.
Yeah, we're definitely not the podcast for you. Wait till we get to closing remarks. Oh boy, you'll get so mad you'll burn your house down from all the anger coming out of you. So,
I wanted to talk about the whole situation with Alex Jones and CNN. That will trigger some people, I'm sure. But
let's stuff towards closing remarks because a lot happened in February.
That's very true. A lot happens.
So Black Panther came out. It was after Valentine's Day, right? I think. Was it before?
17th or something like
Okay.
I saw it only. I guess I saw it about a week ago, but yeah. It had been out for a couple of weeks when I saw it, and it was not very busy. When I went in there, there were about three people. And then a few minutes into the movie, some black guys smell like they've been smoking pot. I guess they showed up late because of that. so they walked in. And then a little while later, some more people showed up. So there may be like seven people in there or something. But I saw it like mid-afternoon on, I think, a Wednesday of last week.
Okay.
So it was not that busy. But they had posters up at the concession stand saying, Black Panther costumes are allowed, but you can't wear a mask, you can't have face paint, and you can't have simulated weapons, which I thought was kind of funny because I guess somebody must have shown up with like African face paint and like the bones that girl had on her face and like spear or something, like full African garb, and they're like, sorry, we're not allowing this in here because it's a safety hazard or something.
That's a legitimate reason.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want, like, what happened with the Batman movie in Colorado at Aurora.
Yeah.
Where that guy showed up and killed a bunch of people during the movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you probably can't do that with a wooden spear, but still.
So anyways, getting back to the movie, I mean, how did you really think about it? Because it just seemed like an alright movie to me.
Yeah, I mean, I went in, as usual, when they get a 99% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, thank God for that one guy that dissed this movie, because, like, I mean, first of all, I think it's good to throw that wrench in the system, but then also the fact, like, I walked out there, I'm like, you know what, that guy had a good point.
Yeah, so there was one guy at first, someone named, I think Ed Power or something like that,
yeah.
From... Australia.
He's an Ireland movie reviewer for like a newspaper or whatever, and he's the one that gave it a bad review, and people were just trashing him online. And I'm like,
they were calling him like white power.
Yeah, and I'm just like, you know, there's probably something to
this. His review was like 3 out of 5, like saying the action was not very great or something like that, and that really triggered people. They were like, how can this be your criticism when this is this great cultural landmark? How can you say that it's bad? These are people who hadn't seen the movie. This was before the movie came out.
Yes.
And they decided that it was good before they had seen it.
Yeah.
This guy was a racist for not liking it.
Yep.
And then there was a second review, I think it was from Australia, and people were saying, like, why did you let this white person write a review? He's trashing our culture, and he's white-splaining to us, which I had never heard this term before, but I guess it's the new equivalent of mansplaining. And people were saying, like, well, why aren't you just colorblind and just accept anyone can refute anything. Why does it have to be decided by race? And they were like, colorblind is a racist concept. No, actually, that's the opposite of racism, and you're being racist by saying that white people can't have opinions.
Yeah. And therefore, the party eats itself.
Yeah. And so this is something that's obviously been a topic before on here, but the whole concept of just how crazy and politically correct people are about, mm-hmm. you know, white people aren't allowed to have opinions about these things, and you have to have an opinion decided before you've seen the movie. Like, if you don't want to see the Ghostbusters movie, you're sexist, because you have to have already decided before you see it that it's going to be the greatest thing ever, and you have to want to see it.
And then you're going to get horribly disappointed.
Yeah. Anyway, I just went in thinking, like, okay, so it had 99% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. They're obviously trying to push something here. And
yeah.
You linked to that video of Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson talking about it, and Alex Jones said the same thing. It was like, whenever you see a movie that's 99%, you know that that's the corporate media. They're trying to push some sort of message with this. They've told everybody, you have to get on board. You have to all give positive reviews to this. You have to hype it up and make it the biggest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as crazy as that guy can be, he's often right about things. He's right about that.
Yep.
This is a cultural hive mind that they have, that they have to support something even if it's not good. We saw this with Star Wars. Everybody had to support it because it was a feminist movie. This is the same thing. Everybody had to support it because it's a black movie. So,
and I'm not against, like, supporting a black movie as long as it's well written and well done and you know, well paced. And Black Panther, to me, is not a well paced movie. And I mean, the first 45 minutes, John, I thought I was watching a Nat Geo documentary on Africa. It was all about, like, we got to make this symbolic about, like, him seeing his dead father and this tribal thing, but then before that he's got to be king and through a tribal war battle, and just a lot of scenes just drug on. Like, I can understand the necessity of being that in there, because it's the backstory of Black Panther, so you got to know, like, you know, like, how important this culture is, and I get that. But there's just some stuff that they could have just been cut down dramatically in order to, like, move the pacing along better. Like, the movie did not need to be as long as it did.
Yeah. So, that's true. I mean, these movies are all too long. It's ridiculous. They're all over 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours, 15 minutes. It doesn't need to be that long. The part where they go to Korea, why did they do that other than just to sell it to the Asian market?
Or to show that there's a cool, like, car chase scene, which is actually one of the better action parts of that movie.
Yeah, I'm not saying that sequence is bad, but it's the same thing that happens in every Transformers movie, where they just go to Korea for some reason, or every Avengers movie.
Well,
you know?
In this one, like, it was some sort of weapons deal that was going down with the scarred-up Australian guy or whatever, that's like a mercenary, who was supposed to be this really bad guy, and then he gets just murked off, and then it's... Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So then
but there's no particular reason why the deal had to take place in Korea when it's an American agent buying it and it was stolen in America. So why don't they just sell it to him in America? Like, they just go to Korea just because they want Koreans to see the movie.
Yeah. Hey, look at us, like, destroy your streets with our, like, CGI cars. And, you know, like, check out Black Panther's, like, camo thing that starts from his neck, which is actually some cool technology. I know
no Korean characters in it or anything. Like, there's just, like, Korean background characters, and nobody significant from Korea joins the team or anything.
That's
like
true.
The guy who joins the team there is the CIA agent, which is the American white sidekick character.
He was treated as a sidekick character too. Like, he had, like, no strong element to him. Like, they were about to kill him off, and then he somehow lives.
That's what Disney does. That's what happened at the end of Star Wars.
Well, no. Here's the thing. Disney, like, I'm surprised it allowed. Was the real villain of the movie, like, winds up killing himself in front of Black Panther, and I was like, huh. Well, I got to give him that because I thought for sure he was going to live, and I'm like, all right, just, you know, you don't need to kill yourself because you didn't. Your Black Lives Matter rhetoric didn't come to fruition like you thought it would, and then he wound up killing himself anyways. And I was like, huh, that's actually, I'm kind of impressed by that. But I guess there's no other use for that character after this movie, so you gotta do something with him.
Yeah, so I wrote a bunch of Black Panther comics to try to prepare for this and get what the Black Panther character is all about. And I read most of the ones from the 60s, 70s, 80s, the classic ones.
And how did that go?
And the Killmonger character is from the comics, and okay. He does die in there.
Okay.
But then he gets brought back as android of the Mandarin, who somehow puts his rings into him and makes him come back to life and try to take the throne from T'Challa again. So they could do some silly stuff like that, but they haven't really done much reviving characters like that in these movies, mm-hmm. other than, I guess, Loki has, like, fake died at one point. But,
yeah, that was in Thor 2.
Yeah, but overall, I think they could probably find other villains, but I think they killed off Claw as well, which is the other main villain that the Black Panther has. And he was the white villain that, I guess, he was kind of like comic relief character.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was a fun character for sure. I mean,
I thought he was, like, one of the only characters when he was on screen that you kind of enjoy watching. Like,
yeah,
most of them were
yeah.
kind of, like, boring.
Yeah, the rest of it was just like, you know, put that crazy, funny white guy back on. He was great. And then they kill him off, and I was like, aww.
Yeah, I didn't care as much for Killmonger. I felt like he was kind of not a great villain.
Yeah, I know, like, there's, like, comparisons, like, where people were making it, like, where, you know, Uganda is, or Wakanda, whatever, is a, like, basically, like the nation Trump wants, because Wakanda is a nation that is guarded by walls, where they don't want anybody coming in, they have all these natural resources that they don't want to share with anybody. And then, here, you know, Killmonger is this guy that's supporting Black Lives Matter rhetoric, where he's, like, wanting to arm rebel groups. But you know clearly it's about, like, the BLM movement. And then, of course, it's the Black Panther to say, like, no, that's wrong, we need to work together or whatever. And then there's that, like, speech at the end of the UN, where, like, oh, I guess I will share this technology with you guys. I mean, I'm sorry for holding it back. It could have made the world a better place, but we didn't want to do that. And what got me about Wakanda was the fact that, like, it's supposed to be this beautiful paradise city. And, like, one of the ending scenes is, like, they have a beautiful staircase, and it's in front of a wall that has, like, gangster graffiti on the background. And I'm like, isn't this supposed to be some paradise? Like, so even in their paradise, they still have to find a way to ghetto it up. And I just thought that looked so tacky.
They're always talking about how Wakanda is, like, the most technologically advanced country, and how it's so awesome because it has vibranium. But, like, in the comics, and I got this vibe from the movie, too, it seems like all the wealth that is produced from vibranium all just goes to the Black Panther and his mansion.
Yeah, and his suits and his technology that's run by, like, his sister or whatever.
Yeah, and it seems like the others in his country are poor. Like,
yeah, they're just like standard farmers or whatever, and, like, this, like, you know, life is good for us.
Yeah. Like, they had in the old Black Panther comics, they had him in Jungle Action was his first series that he was in.
Yeah.
And they had two different maps that they showed of it in there. Showing Wakanda in different places, because I guess they would retcon it every few months about
doesn't Wakanda just, like, get up and move to another part of Africa or something? Like, can it do that?
Maybe that's the excuse. But yeah, I mean, it's not a real place. It's not a real country. So people are trying to claim, like, this disproves Trump's claim that Africa's a shithole. Actually, it doesn't, because it's not real.
It's a fantasy. Like, it's not a real country. Like, come on, guys. Did you forget what you just saw? It's a movie. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. And just the fact that they have natural resources doesn't automatically make all their people really advanced and great and everything. I mean, because it seems like, you know, in Saudi Arabia, for instance, they have all this oil. And what happens with it, there's some companies that are connected to the royal family and to international capitalism, you know, to the U.S. and everything.
Right.
And they make all the money off the oil, and they dole out welfare to the population, but the population is generally living a very primitive lifestyle.
Yes.
And that's the case, I think, in Wakanda, too. And so they're not really, you know, not a shithole, you know, just because they have vibranium. So I don't think it proves that Africa's not a shithole or whatever, you know. It's just, it's not real, and B, it's just like, okay, maybe the Black Panther's mansion is not a shithole, but, like, didn't you see the rhino farms and stuff? Like, these do not look like they're advanced dwellings, and, like, they have some advanced economy. It seems like they're, like, a pastoral, nomadic kind of culture, you know, very similar to what's in Africa now, which is not that advanced.
Yeah, I mean,
so I don't know that this is like some great portrayal of Africa as the most modern and advanced place in the world, because it's not, obviously.
It's not a real place, guys.
Yeah.
What was it? Like, I was thinking of like these other people that like to write articles and boast about, you know, their rhetoric or whatever, but there was that one guy that was like, hey, we should bark at white people like the guerrilla group does when they barked at the CIA agent because he's a white guy. And you're like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, really? This is what you're promoting?
Yeah. I won't deny I did laugh at that scene, but the idea that you want to be like the man ape, as he is called in the comics, M'Baku.
Yeah.
It's like a guy who puts on like an ape costume and just like is always attacking people and fighting and barking, and he's like totally primitive. And
yeah,
violent.
Yeah.
Why would you want to emulate this character?
It doesn't, yeah, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever to like, prove you're better. It's like to prove you're better than someone else, you have to act like you're 5 years old.
Yeah,
that's essentially what I'm getting from these writers that write this stuff. Like, we got to, you know, assert our dominance or whatever, like, over the white people. And it's like that is definitely not how you do it, and not how you should do it, ever.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if people actually followed this guy's advice. Like, if they're being arrested by a cop for stealing something, and then they start barking at the cop when the cop tries to say, like, hey, come over here, I'm gonna arrest you, or whatever. Yeah. The cop is likely to just, like, think that they're going mad and shoot them or something.
Yeah, he's like, well, this guy's crazy, he's a threatening to my danger, therefore I'm probably gonna tase and or shoot him.
Yeah.
It's like, if the guy responded like a regular human being, then it would be a peaceful... Anyways.
The cops shoot dogs all the time. Like, that's a thing that cops are known for doing. It's sad, but I mean, the thing is, you don't want to act like that. It's not going to end well for you.
And right.
So that's not good advice. That's not empowering people. That's just encouraging them to be stupid.
Yes. Don't listen to those people online that write stuff like that. That's what we're saying.
Right.
And it might just be like a stupid clickbait article for people to get attention, just to say something stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I'm sure there's a big industry of people just writing about Black Panther and making money off of saying how great it is. And
yeah. But, okay, so...
What was unbelievable to me was how much money it made. It was as much as, like, the Avengers movies.
Yes.
Just because of the hype, I think, just the media hyping people up over the racial aspect of it and saying, like, you have to see the movie or you're racist, so everybody rushes out to see the movie. Or maybe it's because there's nothing else in February, I don't know. But...
According to Forbes, because I'm Googling this, it's one of the articles is Black Panther box office more records and milestones as it nears 900 million. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this is the new time for superhero movies, because you had Deadpool come out in February, and that did really well. And then now this, so it seems like Disney is going to put out a Marvel movie now every February.
Yeah.
So that's the new thing.
Superhero season
is now like February to November.
Yeah, I did see the trailer for Deadpool. I'm just excited that there's like going to be a movie with Cable in it, and he looks really awesome. And I'm just like, okay, I definitely got to see this.
Yeah, it should be good.
Yeah. Because I saw the trailer for that when I went and saw Death Wish, actually, which I found was a really good movie, even though it's got a 13% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But on the flip side of that, it's got an audience score of 86. So a lot of people liked Death Wish. And I know why.
Just how far the critics apart.
Yeah, I know, you know why freaking Death Wish is rated so low, because the movie is such a pro NRA like message or whatever about people owning guns to protect themselves, and that's like, and that's the whole thing about like, oh, well, the narrative now for political reasons is to hate guns. So this movie's about out promoting guns, which I could not have come out at a better time based on what happened last month. No, like, I understand the rhetoric of the movie. Like, because I've already seen, like, most of the Charles Bronson Death Wish movies, because I saw, like, the third one on Valentine's Day, and, I freaking enjoyed it. I mean, like, it's a fun, like, action movie, and Death Wish, like, with Bruce Willis being the role as basically Charles Bronson, like, I thought he did a really good job on it. Like, so, it's just a fun movie to watch, and Bruce Willis has some really good one-liners, like when he comes to kill people in that movie, which is great. No, I did not have a problem with Death Wish at all. I actually just really enjoyed it.
There was also that Clint Eastwood movie that came out recently, and people were saying, well, why is this not getting more attention when it's about an actual hero instead of Black Panther, which is a fictional hero in a fictional country?
No, it's like a 13, 15 to Paris or whatever.
15, 17 to Paris.
That's apparently. It. 15 to 17 to Paris. And that's based on the people acting in there are the ones that really save people.
Mm-hmm.
And no one wants to give a crap about that movie.
And, yeah, based nobody talked about Paris. It.
Yeah.
And it was because they were more focused on this made-up movie here.
Yeah. I will say this, Death Wish at least is 1 point above 50 Shades Freed. I can live with those. I can live with that score.
I just looked on there on Rotten Tomatoes for 15-17. It says 25% for critics, 45% for audience. Critic consensus 15-17. The Paris plays clumsily well-intentioned tribute to the act of heroism, but by casting real-life individuals involved, Clint Eastwood fatally derails his own efforts. I mean, maybe they're not good actors because they're just regular people. I don't know. But
I think it's probably a pretty good movie.
Probably.
I mean, usually with Rotten Tomatoes, like, and I've said this before, like, any movie that's rated low is usually something I like. Anything that's rated high, I'm like, I'm either like, eh, or, ugh, that was a piece of crap.
Yeah.
So.
And here's what it says on Death Wish. Death Wish is little more than a rote retelling that lacks the grit and conviction of the original and also suffers from spectacularly bad timing. And it shows how far would you go to protect your family, Death Wish. Apparently protecting your family is a bad thing now. I mean, because the left doesn't believe that you have the right to defend yourself and your family. I guess not. Make it so that you have to... I mean, remember when the Zimmerman thing came out, and the Zimmerman-Trayvon thing came out, and they were saying, well, the problem here is this stand-your-ground law where you can protect yourself. We want to have a law called the responsibility to run law, where you have to just flee from criminals and you can't defend yourself. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And that was when I started to realize how insane the left is. Like, they don't believe that people have the right to defend themselves at all. And it's just like, what the hell is wrong with them? Like, if somebody is attacking you, slamming your head into the pavement, and they're reaching for your gun and you can't defend yourself, like, this was an open and shut case where the police knew the guy. They were on the phone with him the whole time. Mm-hmm. That's why they didn't press charges, because it was obviously self-defense. And the left went completely hysterical about it, saying it was a white supremacist that just sniped a black kid for no reason when he was going to buy Skittles and iced tea. Well, that was not what happened at all. He got assaulted, and then he had to defend himself. And the left doesn't believe you can do that. They don't believe in self-defense at all. And it's just nuts.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves with closing remarks here.
Yeah, but I mean, it relates to all this. Because I feel like that was the start of like the whole black militant movement that's been, you know, dominant for the last 5 years or so. Of just completely shaping the dialogue about this stuff, where anyone who even would bring up just well, you know, that there was a jury trial and Zimmerman was considered innocent, and in so many of these cases, they just hype something up, and this movie is just another thing where it's just hyped up as a, it's like a precondition. You have to believe in one side just based on race, and you can't actually look at it impartially and rationally judge it. Like, everybody had to love the movie before it even came out. Mm-hmm. And mob anyone who criticized it who had actually seen it. It was just completely nuts what happened to that poor power guy. Like, he probably wasn't even aware of how hyped up Americans are about race. Like, probably in Ireland, they just see it as just another movie. And then the poor guy starts getting death threats.
Yeah. I didn't know if you still wanted to talk or whatever else you had to say about Black Panther, because I was going to mention briefly about that. I went and saw Mazinger Z Infinity in theaters. It's only released at like Fathom Theaters, and it's like the Fathom in Greenville, close to where I live. Like they're the ones that play like mostly anime movies when they come out in theaters. So like Mazinger Z Infinity was out for like 2 days. It was subbed only. And I actually, like, I don't know too much about Mazinger Z, but, like, for... it was still, like, a really fun movie to watch, and I don't believe you need to know a whole lot about Mazinger Z to enjoy it. Because, like, I came in there with a friend from my Gundam Club, and he knew nothing about Mazinger Z, and then I knew a little bit of it, and then at the end of it, he was just like, holy crap, that was a really good movie. Like, I enjoyed watching this movie. It was really fun. And,
yeah, I didn't see it yet, but I want to.
Yeah, like that's like.
I assume it'll be on Blu-ray or DVD soon.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure who's releasing it, but yeah, definitely check out Mazinger Z Infinity. It's kind of like this whole thing where it's like in the future from I think probably how Shin Mazinger ended. I believe I don't think it involves anything with Mazinger Kaiser, or I'm not too sure. Maybe it does. Well, let me.
There's all these different continuities.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I get confused on.
Yeah,
Mazinger Z Infinite.
I'll have to see it, but I mean, in general, I liked the manga when I read it, and I liked that design. I have the Shogun Warriors of Mazinger and Grandizer and all those great Gundam robots.
Yeah,
and I definitely plan to see it at some point.
So okay, so I checked Rotten Tomatoes on Mazinger Z Infinity. No critic has reviewed this yet. However, it's got an audience score of 100% by 29 people. So that is pretty damn good for something that has a limited release, and it was a really fun movie to watch. Go figure.
One more thing about Black Panther. There's this guy in the movie that has, I don't know what it is in his mouth, but he has like a disc or like an orb or something in his mouth, and they keep showing him, and he doesn't have any, like, relevance to the plot. Like, he never really does anything.
Yeah.
But he's in so many scenes, and every time I see him, it just looks so uncomfortable. Like, can you imagine that thing being in your mouth?
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, like, I was like, and he has it in his mouth the entire time.
Yeah. And it's like, why is that in his mouth? And why is he here? Like, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
he's just some like tribal leader.
Yeah, he's just a back. He's just a background character.
Yeah.
All right. So Mazinger Z, it takes place 10 years after the events of I think Mazinger Z when they think they killed Dr. Hell, but he obviously returns back in this. Spoiler alert. But this is like regarding like there's a kind of a nice romance plot where basically Sayaka and Koji Kabuto are. They're dating, but then they're not sure, like, if they're gonna, you know, like, kind of sort of, like, tie the knot yet or whatever. Because, like, I think he's, like, Koji's too involved in his work, and Sayaka thinks, like, you know, like, I don't think it's gonna work out with us. But then there's sort of a plot thing where, like, they're made to be destined for each other by another character in it. I don't want to spoil too much of it. But, like, yeah, there's a lot of people that show up back on this, like, Count Brocken, Baron Ashra, the character Boss owns his own ramen shop and helps out with the group, with the Mazinger Z team to fight Dr. Hill and his minions or whatever. There's also this, like, these, they're called Idol Mazingirls, which is, like, basically these, like a female cheerleader group that's, like, in skimpy outfits to, like, promote, like, the Mazing, like, technology or whatever, and they have, like, their own, Aphrodite robots that they go help a boss and the crew out with. It's just a fun movie. And like I'm in there, like I think there was like a handful of people that went and saw this with us when we were in there. Actually, what was interesting was my friend and I showed up like a few minutes late, and in the theater, the subtitles were the aspect ratio in the screen was off, so the subtitles were cut off at the bottom. So I was like, alright, I'm gonna tell my friend, like, alright, I'll be right back, I'll see if I can get this fixed, cause you couldn't read, cause in the beginning of the movie they had like this,
Can you hear the thunder?
Not really.
Okay, it's probably some trash in me on my mic.
Okay. But, so.
You got him to restart the movie, right?
Basically, yeah, because like the beginning was the interviews with like Go Nagai and the director and the character designer, and I was like, you can't read what they were saying, cause the subtitles were cut off. So I went and talked to someone to fix it. They're like, hey, can you change the aspect ratio? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I get back, and for about 5 minutes, they cut the movie off to try to fix everything. And you hear them in the back trying to figure out how to work it. So then they wind up restarting the whole movie again. So which it only got like maybe 10 minutes in or 15 minutes in. So I got to see all the interviews again, which made the people in the theater like see the scenes again. But at least with them, they can rewatch it and figure out like what these people were talking about. So it all worked out in the end.
Josh made some comment like, at least it was better than the Attack on Titan live action movie where it just had one subtitle for the whole movie and they couldn't fix it.
Yeah, like, yeah, for the people at Fathom working the projector, like they just basically had to like restart the movie because it's digital. But, I mean, at least it was in the very beginning when we got there. I was like, okay, we can fix this before it starts, because I'm not going to read cut-off subtitles the entire time, because it'll be messed up. And then, they look really good once they fix the aspect ratio.
That's good.
Yeah, so that's my story on making sure Mazinger Z Infinity was great again at Greenville Theater when this came out. I know, like, in terms of anime stuff coming out, I think there's, like, going to be a showing of, like, this live-action, like, theater production of Sailor Moon on theaters. But that's also, like, very limited on where they're airing it. Like, I think the closest one is, for me, is, like, in North Carolina. And I'm like, I'm not driving 6 hours to go see Sailor Moon, like, stage or whatever. It's, like, Cats, but with Sailor Moon characters. I have no idea how that is. I don't know. Like, if it was close to me, I'd be like, I don't know, maybe I might check it out, I don't know. I know my local, the theater I go to for these movies, they're having like a Studio Ghibli like year or whatever, so like it'll give me a reason to go see Pocoroso in a couple months. So I'm like, I might as well go see it in the big screen. I haven't seen that one. That's one of the Miyazaki movies like I've been meaning to check out for like a while now, but now I have a chance to go see it, so.
Yeah, I think you would like it. I mean, it's sort of similar to Wind Rises in that it's shows off how much he loves airplanes.
Yeah, I mean, I still need to see Nausicaa. I have it on DVD. I figure we can probably review it in one day, but I just.
We've been meaning to review Warriors of the Wind for a long time.
Yeah, we need to. Maybe that's the one we got to review is Warriors of the Wind. I can see Nausicaa, then we can watch Warriors of the Wind.
That's the greatest way to see it first.
I mean,
I saw it uncut first.
I mean, like, we did review the Arcadia of My Youth, but it was the Vengeance of a Space Pirate dub for the Anime 82 podcast, which will probably never, ever be released. And I still have that recording, so maybe I can just bring it off the vault and put it up here one day.
Oh, I didn't even realize that had never been
put out. No, it never got put out on Anime 82. We recorded that back in, like, 2013. It's been over 4 years. I think we can probably do it yourself. Yeah, well, I mean, unless we want to review Arcadia of My Youth and then just tack that on as, like, a super episode. We could do that. I don't know.
That was the one where we had, like, there's some video shop in Maryland or something that I had bought it from, I think, online. And then it turned out you had bought other tapes from them or something. Remember this?
Yes, I remember having that discussion
with you.
Wonderbooks
or something like that? Wonderbook and tapes or something?
I thought, no, that was related to my Red Photon Zillion VHS tape.
Zillion, I thought so,
yeah, because I got the first one. I got the first VHS tape because I found the 2 through 5 from the guy at the flea market in Raleigh, which he no longer sells the anime VHS tapes anymore, so I have no reason to go over to see that sketchy Indian dude ever again and his overpriced game systems that he basically fixes by scraping the covers with a screwdriver. Because I've seen his lackeys do that before, and I'm like, nope, I'm not buying anything from you, you sketchy piece of crap.
Hey, the same guy you bought the Devilman DVD from? The live-action one?
No, that's a different guy. That's not going to get them all in Atlanta. Totally different. Okay. Totally different locations, totally different people.
I thought you had bought that from an Indian guy, too.
He might have been Pakistani. I don't know. He was okay. Very Middle Eastern. He was nicer than the Indian guy I know from the Raleigh flea market, which that guy might, I don't know if he's still there. I haven't been to that flea market in years. But, anyways, yeah, I don't know, like, regarding going, everything going back to Black Panther 10 minutes later, to kind of sum up, I mean, I guess we got said everything about Black Panther, but I mean, I can't really think of anything else I wanted to add to that.
Unless there were some parts that were really silly, like when they're falling into the volcano and they're still like punching each other. Like, is that really plausible that they would be doing that while they're falling, you know, instead of trying to grab the wall and slow their fall or something? And then they just kind of get back up when they land after falling thousands of feet, and then they just keep fighting each other. And
are you talking about the when they land on like the monorail thing that they fight on? Like, between Black Panther and the other guy?
The two Black Panthers at the end, there's, like, some big cliff or something that they fall down into, like, a vibranium mound.
Yeah, I just remember the vibranium train passing through, and then Black Panther was like, you gotta do this thing to make it easier for me to fight him, so, like, his technology messes up so he can't be in the suit the whole time. I remember that. But, yeah, they were, like, punching all the way down, and...
It just looked obvious that they were using wires to lower them at a speed that they would not actually be falling at.
Yeah.
So that
they could
continue to choreograph their fight scene as they were falling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, like, the action scenes were just not believable at all in this movie. It was so obviously fake that it kind of takes you out of it. And when you have an action movie, that's kind of the core part of the movie. It's not just like, oh, look, they have the good skin color instead of the bad skin color. It's a good movie. Like, well, if it's an action movie, it should have actual good action in it.
Yeah.
It kind of didn't.
So this kind of backs up the powder guy or power guy's thing, where he's like, the action wasn't that good. And I mean, like, cause with this, it was just like, I just wasn't like thoroughly impressed with Black Panther at all. And, like, they had, like, that final battle thing at the end, but it just, everything just seemed so mediocre. And I walked out of the theater, and, like, I was the only one out of the friends group that was like, this movie was alright, and everyone's like, oh, this movie's awesome. It's totally awesome. I'm glad, like, this is a great movie. And I'm like, I don't see it. I'm always that guy.
Anything about Africa, where they have, like, a rhino, it's, like, charging someone, and then it just suddenly stops and licks them. And it's like, isn't a rhino kind of like a ferocious beast that would just like tear into you with its horn?
I believe so, according to the Nat Geo stuff I've watched in the past that, you know, accurately talks about rhinos and what they do if a person were to come near one.
I mean, if you compare this to like the 70s Black Panther comics, he's fighting animals like half of the issues. There's just like a gratuitous fight scene with a jungle animal.
Yeah.
And, like, endless captions detailing how difficult it is for him to fight the animal. And it's just very tedious and not great. And it was another thing that was totally overhyped, where you see a lot of lists of, like, best 70s comics online. And that's always in there. But it was the worst-selling comic that Marvel was publishing at the time. And it was not actually popular at the time at all.
Yeah.
And I think people just decided, like, retroactively that it was some great comic, but the Black Panther was never a popular comic character. He never really had any comics that were all that great that were just dedicated to him. I mean, he has some good appearances in Avengers and Fantastic Four, and some of those stories have decent morals, you know, that most of them are anti-racism. They're about,
yeah,
you know, opposing black nationalism and white nationalism. I read one where he's fighting the Sons of the Serpent, and it turns out it's being led by a black and a white pundit that go on TV every night and argue with each other in order to stoke people up racially. And then they have also like a supervillain group that's going out and killing people in order to try to create a race war. And so I thought that that was kind of like a take on, you know, I guess at the time it would have been Malcolm X and,
yeah. And then we see history repeating itself now with the same kind of, way that the style they're doing things in the comics.
Right.
Interesting, huh?
I mean, the thing is that that's like a moral that still would work today.
Right.
But instead, this is, I feel like you can't really draw that much from this movie about it having really a strong moral or message or anything, because it's just kind of a dumb Disney action movie, really,
yeah,
at its core, where it's not really all that thoughtful or provocative of insight or anything like that. The way that people were hyping it up as, like, oh, this is really like a philosophical movie that's going to make you think, and it's such a brilliant treatise on what it is to be black. And it's
it made me think of the most comfortable way to doze off during the long periods of nothing happening in the movie. There was times I started dozing off in that movie.
Daft slept through most of it.
Oh, the what?
Daft said that he fell asleep during the movie and slept through like an hour of it.
I don't blame him, because it was just that boring. And I'm thinking, like, there's no way I'm the only one in here that's fallen asleep. Like, there's got to be other people. Like, maybe, yeah. I was. I don't know. But it just got that boring at times. And this is the beginning of the movie, too.
There was a part where the Black Panther is defeated by the evil Black Panther.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt like that was kind of a boring stretch of the movie after that happened, where kind of like nothing was happening and they're acting like Chala's dead, even though you know he's not really dead.
Right.
And then you have to have him, they have to find him, they have to revive him, and he has to go fight the guy, and then he gets the throne back. And it's like, okay, we know how this is going to go. This is how all the movies go. You know, it's no different than like what happens in the third Christopher Nolan Batman movie, where Bane defeats Batman, and then Batman, yeah, has a trial to go through, and then he comes back and he retakes Gotham.
Yeah, but that was funner to watch.
Yeah, except for that was good, you know.
Yeah, that was that's good. Oh man, even now with you trying to recap like Black Panther, like, I'm starting to fall asleep just thinking about, yeah, that movie.
And Deku was like, oh, what a surprise. Zionic didn't like Black Panther. You guys have totally lost the plot on this racial stuff. Like, he hadn't seen, I asked him, have you seen the movie? And he said no. And then he goes on a huge tirade about, like, how racist we are. He hasn't even seen the movie, and he went on like a rant about how you were racist and like we're responsible for the school shooting because he didn't like Black Panther. It's ridiculous.
I know. I read that, and I was like, I will pay him no mind. Nope, not gonna fall for that bull crap. I've learned that lesson time and time again.
When he posts stuff like that, it's like, why even have him on here if he's just gonna constantly insult us and all he ever does is just try to pick a fight with you.
I know, and I'll have an opinion on something, and it's not even like that terrible, and he'll like take it and blow it out of proportion. He's been after me for years. I don't know what his deal is, but then when we get him on the podcast, he's cool to talk to.
That's the weird thing about him, is sometimes he seems totally normal, sometimes he's just a total asshole.
I know. I mean, it was great having him on for Star Wars, and like I'd love to have him on Star Wars again, but or like to talk about more stuff, but.
Yeah, but not if he's gonna act like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just try not to think about it too much.
Yeah.
I don't.
Just try to take it with a grain of salt when he says, yep, stuff like that. It's just ridiculous.
Yep. So, I don't know. Have we got anything else to mention about Black Panther? I was gonna mention one other thing that's sort of related, okay, to the Marvel Universe, was that someone posted like an article about how like Fox could have bought all of Marvel back in the 90s for like $25 million. And my argument to that, which is a very fair argument, was like, well, does anybody remember the superhero movies we had in the 90s? Why would Fox want to invest any money into that? Because they all sucked. They did get better when X-Men came out, and X-Men was a Fox property. So, and that's kind of what really started these, like, good superhero movies to come down the line in the past almost 20 years from now. It's from that first X-Men movie.
Mm-hmm. And I think that technically it was Sony that wanted to do it, but they were trying to buy Spider-Man.
And, right, it was the Sony thing.
And then they had Marvel offering, like, well, do you want to buy these other guys, too, for more money? And they were like, no, we just want Spider-Man for, like, the lowest price you're going to give us. So they were like, nobody cares about these other superheroes.
Yeah, and then, like, but Spider-Man worked for Sony. Like, those Tobey Maguire movies I really like. Those were good for their time.
They were successful.
Yeah, they were very successful.
And there were a lot of movies that they tried to make in the 90s in the superhero genre. Nobody remembers that now. Nobody remembers these movies that act like this is the first black superhero movie. We just listed off like five superhero movies with black people.
Yes, in the very 90s. Beginning of this episode, in case you want to care to rewind, but you know what, I'll save you the time. Here's what we had in the 90s. We had Blank Man. We had Meteor Man. We had Spawn. We had Blade. We had Hancock. We had Catwoman. We had the Falcon guy from the other Marvel movies, but I mean, he didn't star in his own thing. So that's seven black superheroes right there that we've got. I don't know if I'm missing any others.
There's a War Machine from the
War Machine. Yes, War Machine's another black superhero guy, and he's gonna be in the new Marvel Avengers movie. I mean, there's eight of them out there, guys, and you act like Black Panther's the only one that ever existed. Like, come freaking on.
Yeah. I mean, it was obviously just a marketing strategy to pretend that it was historic in order to get more people to see it. Disney knows how to play identity politics in order to get people hyped up about something that they have to go see it. Obviously, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, because people are sheep and they're dumb as hell.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I kind of do want to talk about the whole Alex Jones thing now, because
all right, so
it's similar to the stuff he and Paul Joseph Watson were saying, but I want to talk about the whole situation with CNN just trying to completely annihilate him from YouTube.
So starting now, I'm looking at 56 minutes. This is now closing remarks. So we're in closing remarks territory. People, you have been warned about whatever we're going to talk about. Go ahead, John.
Yes, you may be offended here. But
triggering is upon us.
He's obviously crazy on a lot of things, and he tears off his shirt and starts screaming about how they're making the frogs gay.
Aaron Amore is real. I'm Alex Jones.
He claimed that he was going to be banned today
YouTube.
From YouTube, it did not happen.
Yeah.
but he was frozen out of his account for about 10 hours yesterday. And they keep giving him strikes and then reversing the strikes and claiming it was from rogue employees, which is something that they did with Donald Trump's Twitter account. They suspended it for an hour one day.
I remember that.
And then they said it was just a rogue employee who was on his way out. I don't believe this stuff. I mean, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think that these are trial balloons. They're testing to see what they can get away with, how much they can silence people, mm-hmm. and whether there's going to be any backlash or not. Because you don't just have high-level things with millions and millions of followers. Just one rogue employee just gets rid of it. They don't have any fail-safe mechanisms where multiple people have to review whether something is offensive or not before it gets removed. I mean, if that's true, then they have too low of criteria for what is being removed. And if it's not true, then they're just lying to you and trying to make it seem that way so that they can remove stuff and pretend that it's just a rogue employee afterwards if they get too much backlash and then back off of it.
Yeah.
And they did back off here because he's still on there. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, started a second account on there. So I think he must have been serious about it, and he didn't just make it up to get more subscribers. Like when PewDiePie deleted his account and made a second one to get more subscribers or whatever. like, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him, because, I mean, he is kind of a huckster. He's always trying to sell, like, super male vitality and that kind of crap.
Super male vitality. You gotta get it for the big-ass boners. And that's how you fight the communists and the liberals and
my filters.
My filters. Ah! I'm sweating. I haven't sweat this much since I had that interview with Minton Kelly. Because I saw the footage of them kids going around in circles, and they ain't dead. Rest in peace, kids.
That's something we should be laughing about.
I'm being very polite. I'm not laughing about it, but
right. They've been going after him because they claim that he's a conspiracy theorist on the school shootings.
Yeah.
And he said that with this one, he tried to play it safe compared to what he did. I mean, I didn't
Sandy
see
Hook.
Videos on Sandy Hook, but the way they described it at the time, I guess it's the same way they described this at the time, and his reaction was basically the same at the time too, where he would raise questions. He would say, well, they've done this or that before, and the crisis actors and all this stuff. But then today he has up a video. Let me pull it up. Maybe he's just trying to save his ass here. But it's something like crisis actors. Oh, geez. Let me just find it so I can quote it exactly here. But he was basically saying, like, I didn't actually say they're crisis actors, and he's trying to backpedal from that.
But but they're interviewing the same two people that represent that school, and they've said that they're, like, basically actors.
Okay, here's what it says. The Florida shooting happened. Crisis actors are a mainstream media hoax to censor the web. That's the name of one of his videos that he put up recently.
Yeah.
And it says 3 days ago, so he put that up before he got frozen out of his account. Because it says 3 days ago, and then the next one after that says 1 day ago. So he tried to, he's always trying to, like, say, oh, I'm not actually as crazy as people say. But then in the way he tries to deny it, he often comes across as crazy.
I know.
So that's the problem with him. He is kind of crazy, but I mean, he has the right to be crazy because we have a First Amendment.
Yes.
And that's what people are forgetting here. They'll bring up the fact that there was the Pizzagate incident I guess they call it Pizzagate.
It's always been Pizzagate as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. There was the Comet Pizza. That's the place.
Okay.
The conspiracy theory that the Clinton emails revealed a secret sex dungeon with child slaves in the Comet Ping Pong Pizza place or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah.
So Alex Jones, I guess maybe he talked about it one time or two times, and then later on he said it was a distraction after somebody went in there saying, oh, I saw Alex Jones talk about this place and I'm here to investigate it. And then they, like, fired a shot against the wall or something to show that they're really serious, or, you know, some nutcase went in there and did that.
Yeah.
They didn't actually shoot anybody, but they have been using this to say that he's dangerous and that he needs to be shut down. And in particular, CNN has been really big on this, trying to shut him down.
Uh-huh.
And they've managed to get several of his advertisers to pull out. They somehow found a list of all his advertisers and started demanding that they disassociate themselves from him. And they'll bring up stuff like, this was in, I don't know if CNN mentioned it, but this was in the sexual harassment lawsuit against Alex Jones, which is
the recent one where isn't it like they think he's like gay or something, or
yeah, well, I mean, this Jewish guy claims that Alex Jones is, I mean, this is a totally confusing allegation, but he claims that Alex Jones was trying to solicit him into having gay sex with him by putting gay pornography on his computer. And then he also claims that Alex Jones is anti-Semitic because he had David Duke on the show. So I searched for the video. Did he actually have David Duke on the show? He did. I watched part of it. He was arguing with him the whole time, trying to denounce him, saying, like, I don't agree with you at all about Jews. I think that you're completely wrong, and I'm here to debunk you because I'm concerned that you're doing too much influence. Like, there was nothing about it that was racist at all. Yeah. Nothing anti-Semitic at all. He was completely trying to discredit David Duke the whole time. And it was no different than what happened if David Duke went on CNN. So the fact that they used this to try to get him, I think, is totally dishonest. And does anybody actually think that Alex Jones, I mean, that these two lawsuits, they contradict each other. One claims he's like gay for this Jewish guy, and the other one claims that he's into this black lady because one time he like hugged her and grabbed her butt. This is what she claims. And she says, I felt really uncomfortable because he's always taking off his shirt and there's a bunch of guns all over the place. It's like, okay, you must have known what you're getting in for when you signed up to work with Alex Jones.
Yeah.
You ever watch his videos? He takes off his shirt all the time and starts screaming. Like,
that's his chick.
If that doesn't make you uncomfortable to begin with, then why are you working with him?
Why were like, you there? Make sense.
Yeah. Like, that totally baffles me. That, and I don't think these are going to go anywhere, but... But this is what's going on right now, is that people are... I think it's a coordinated effort to completely try to tear him apart and get him off the internet.
Yeah.
He has millions and millions of subscribers. He's one of the biggest channels on YouTube. He has a huge audience. He had the president on his show one time.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, he is a noteworthy character. And he has broken all kinds of information. He had on Bill Binney, which was one of the former heads of the NSA, and he was talking about how the Russiagate thing is a hoax because the Russians couldn't have transferred that data fast enough from the... From the mainframe and at the rate that the media is claiming, and it has to have been done by a thumb drive, and so it was done by an insider that downloaded it from the DNC computer and then gave it to WikiLeaks, which is supports the Seth Rich theory instead of the Russia theory that the media has been pushing, and then Bill Binney went and talked with Donald Trump about this and the head of the CIA about this, and so this is all stuff that was very credible from a very credible source. He went on Alex Jones and talked about it, and the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just saying like facts about the speeds that are possible via the internet versus via a thumb drive. And so this is important information. And even though Alex Jones, sometimes he has fake conspiracy theories, you know, sometimes there's stuff on there that's real that you're not going to get from CNN, and that's why CNN is trying to silence them, because they don't want competition. They want to completely control what people hear and what people think.
Yeah, which is a media monopoly, which I think, like, isn't there something in like the Constitution that like supposed to like hinder that, like where you don't have like a monopoly where it's like just one publication or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to have freedom of the press.
Yeah.
Different companies espousing different views, and what concerns me is, and it's clear Alex Jones is pushing this hard now, this whole thing of using antitrust to try to break up these internet companies because they've become way too big and have way too much power, and they're obviously trying to censor people now. Like that's the big push now, is to try to shut down conservative thought. They've been purging thousands on Twitter every month, claiming they're bots, but who knows if they actually are or not. And they claim everybody's a bot now. CNN went to this woman. I couldn't believe this video. They put this on the CNN Twitter account. They're proud of it. They went to this random woman in Florida's house. They said, "You're a fan of Being Patriotic on Facebook. You must be a Russian shill. How does it feel to be Putin's puppet? You helped Putin put Trump in the White House." And this woman's standing there completely offended, shocked, befuddled. She's just this random old lady in Florida. CNN doxed her for the crime of liking a Facebook page called Being Patriotic. and going to Trump rallies. That's her sin. And they're trying to completely destroy this random innocent woman.
Yeah.
CNN is completely out of control. They're trying to completely shut down on all conservative speech and on anybody who supports the president. That's why they're trying to get Alex Jones. They hate Trump and they want to eliminate one of his most vocal supporters. And so, I mean, the concept that CNN is just going to run the internet and just try to completely eliminate their competition.
Yeah.
If people go to the internet because they can't trust CNN, because CNN lies. They claim Saddam has WMDs. They claim all these fake mm-hmm. things that they said. Mm-hmm. That caused millions of people to die. That destroyed the Middle East. That led to ISIS. CNN is responsible for so much evil. And they claim, oh, well, but Alex Jones, the one guy, the pizza place, blah, blah, blah. You know, they can do that. They can complain about that. But, you know, what about the things that they've done? What about the fake news that they've reported? They claim Alex Jones is fake news. How many times have they said things that were fake? Okay, that was my rant about Alex Jones at CNN.
I know.
It's just something that pissed me off the last few weeks because they've just been so vehement about it since the Parkland shooting. It's just like a relentless censorship drive that they've been doing. They're trying to completely destroy the First and Second Amendments, and it's unbelievable. I mean, we have a Constitution, for God's sake.
Yeah, and it's in order to override the Constitution, it has to go to the Supreme Court, and I bet you they're going to keep that Constitution alive. There's not going to be an amendment to go around that, because that's the reason why it's there is the fact that you know, so the government doesn't get too powerful, that it's in the people's hands, so they can take the government back by force if need be. So that's why we've got these like militia groups and these like, you know, these mostly in the southern states where pretty much every state has a militia group. You're not going to know about them because they're a secret society. But chances are, like, you know, if something like this happens where the government gets too powerful, these militia groups are going to rise up. And there's several of them out there that more than we think there are.
And what they have to realize at the CNN is that they want to just, you know, they obviously want to disarm the populace. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what they were pushing for at the town hall, mm-hmm. where they had these survivors go up there, and this guy Hogg that's all over the place, everywhere. He's completely driving the narrative. Nobody knew about this guy until a month ago. Suddenly, he's the number one expert on guns that everybody has to listen to.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, Alex Jones says stuff like, they're in the drama club. They're being fed things to say by people who are trying to use them to promote an agenda. As far as I can tell, that's as far as he's gone with this one. He hasn't explicitly said that the shooting didn't happen, that the kids didn't die or anything. So, and even if he did say that, he has the right to say whatever he thinks. And that's what the Constitution is there for. That's what the First Amendment is there for.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of crazy that they just don't want people to be able to talk about this stuff. And if CNN tries to push it all underground, tries to deplatform people from YouTube, just look at what happened recently. Gab is starting to create more social network video services to try to combat against YouTube censoring people.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to drive people to Gab. People are going to see stuff on Gab that's going to radicalize them because Gab is an alt-right website.
And there's dangers to that, too.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is it's going to put people into an echo chamber. They're not going to be on YouTube anymore where they can get a variety of perspectives. They're going to get stuck into a world where they're not going to be getting every point of view. You know, they're just going to be sucked into these awful things like white nationalism and Richard Spencer and that kind of stuff is all over Gab. And, you know, Ghost is willing to fight them on there, but how many people are, you know, he's always getting into fights with white nationalists on there, but I feel like a lot of people will go on there because Alex Jones is on there or something. And I don't know if he's actually on there yet, but, if he does get forced to go to somewhere like Gab because Twitter won't let him or YouTube or whatever, and he's forced to go to some sort of site like that, people are going to go on there, they're going to follow him, they're going to see what's trending, they're going to see the top accounts, and they're going to be pushed in a bad direction because people on there do go too far with the really insane, you know, white supremacist stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they think they can just eliminate stuff because they have so much control. But people can make new websites, you know? You can't just shut things down on the internet because people have the freedom to compete, you know? And so there's going to be other sources of videos if YouTube becomes a place where you can't speak your mind.
Well, yeah, because there's also Vimeo and there's Dailymotion. There's other, like, good competing web hosting sites other than YouTube that are far less restricted when it comes to people, like, wanting to share their speech or whatever. And I think, like, if YouTube's going to go this way, then those people are going to go to those other sites and make them more popular, because then Vimeo will be, and Dailymotion are going to be more than just getting, you know, movies and anime on there without any kind of copyright restriction or whatever. Yeah, I mean, like, you gotta, as a business, you gotta, like, you know, if you say you're for free speech, you gotta show it. And if you want to censor free speech, well, then fine, people are going to go somewhere else to have their platform heard and their voice heard. And, you know, like, I think, you know, how YouTube started is a great platform, and I like it to stay that way, but, you know, the way things are going, it's just like, there's no point in sticking with them, and people have been saying that for years. Like, I was just like, yeah, I don't even trust YouTube's policies and stuff, because it's just like, they're just too controlling.
They want to make it where the small, I mean, this is true on Twitter too, but they want to make it where the small accounts, or the unapproved of accounts.
Right.
That nobody can even hear them. You know, they're trying to demonetize them. They're trying to de-verify people with conservative opinions on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And that started with Milo. That was the first one that happened to. And then they did it with Richard Spencer. Everybody knows that those are the real accounts on there. But they just de-verified them just because they didn't like what they were saying. Like, that is not what verification was supposed to mean. It's just supposed to mean that this is an actual public figure that is not just somebody impersonating somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you de-verify Richard Spencer, I mean, you don't want people following him, sure, but, I mean, he's going to be impersonated by other people who are going to say things that are even more extreme than what he is saying, because he doesn't explicitly call for violence. But what if somebody impersonates him on there and does start calling for violence, and people think it's actually him, and then his following starts committing violence? So this is the whole risk of what they're doing, is that everything that they're doing can backfire and can make things worse. I mean, if they try to do what they want to do with guns, they think that they can just take them all away and then all the violence will stop. America is not Japan, you know? Like, Japan did not have a long history of gun culture and gun ownership. They don't have many guns now. They have low crime rate. That's good for people who live in Japan.
But then it's also, there's a difference between their culture and how they work as a society compared to America. They're very community-based, they're very group-based. And, you know, in America, everyone's out for their own skin, their own neck. I mean, like, yeah, we have communities, but there's only, like, it's done differently than how it is in Japan. Whereas Japan, they have to care, they do care for one another. Whereas here, it's, we care for you, but we gotta get something in return. And, you know, like, if the way, I mean, like, to defend yourself, you know, and you have that Second Amendment backing you up, like, that's just how it works here.
And my concern is that if they try to get rid of it, I mean, it's like you said, there's militias in every state that's going to resist this. So.
Yeah, you can't account for every single gun out there. Like, there's no way. There's too many of them. And the federal government doesn't need to know what I own.
They hate, obviously, like, professors, they hate the American Revolution. You know, I had so many college professors that were saying, well, this was just such an unjustified thing in political science and history classes. They were just a bunch of terrorists that were resisting these taxes. Don't they realize that taxes are good and that Americans are undertaxed?
Oh, my gosh.
And, like, that's like, the consensus in like, politically correct Marxist universities.
Mm-hmm.
So they just think, you know, the whole concept of America, which is, you know, sort of this rebellious country that is willing to stand up for itself and believes in private property and self-ownership, is just awful. And we need to worship the government and give them more powers. But they don't get, that's not what America is. That's not what it's ever been. And if they try to make it that way, there's going to be problems because a lot of people don't believe that. And it's going to cause conflicts. If they try to take away people's freedoms, they're going to fight back. There's going to be a civil war. It's going to get very violent. That's not something you should want to happen. That's something you should try to avoid happening.
Yep.
And they seem like they don't even, they're not even, I don't know if they're not aware of this or they just want it to happen because CNN, they can cover it and get a bunch of ratings if there's fights in the streets. You know, it's like they're trying to egg on Antifa and the alt-right and the most extreme elements of society. They give them so much platform, so much attention, so much just constant coverage of things like Charlottesville and Parkland. Whenever there's a violent incident, they talk about it nonstop for weeks. It inspires other people to become violent. It makes things much worse.
My advice is don't get caught up in it. Don't buy into it.
Yeah.
And too many people do, and then it's just going to make the situation worse. So.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting topic we can discuss real quick since we brought up guns. And I've talked about this with a couple of people I know, like including my youth kids in my church, and then also a buddy of mine from my Gundam group. We actually kind of have the same ideas on politics and our beliefs and stuff. So
I'm guessing it's not Josh.
Do what?
I'm guessing it's not that guy Josh that you knew from high school.
Oh, the guy
that's very liberal that you.
No. His name wasn't Josh. It's definitely not him. It's basically about like the whole thing where Trump's kind of like advocating for teachers to own guns in school. Here's my way of thinking of how it works because we're at that point where it's down to fighting fire with fire. So. And this is the way I would think of it. It's the best way to work was that if this does pass and does go through, it's only for the teachers that want, it's not mandatory for every teacher to carry a gun. There's no way that could happen. I think there's going to be teachers that want to carry guns. Either they want to protect their kids because they have every right to, but also like in a pertain to ex-police or ex-military that are teachers now. The way I've thought of it, which is, I think is probably the best way, is basically like the teachers that do carry guns for these schools, however they may be, they need to go under like a very heavy psych evaluation and need to be like kept up to date on their psychology so they're not the ones going crazy. Also the fact that they should have legally be able to carry a concealed weapons permit. And that the kids don't know which teacher carries guns. And I say that last part because, like, from a student standpoint, I understand this, where, like, you know, you're thinking, like, some kids are like, oh, man, I hope the teacher I really hate isn't the one that has a gun. Because I never trust them, I never talk to them, and I would even hate them more. I get that because, like, that's the way I would feel, too. So then if the students don't know, then they're not going to worry, they shouldn't have to worry about, like, who has a gun or who hasn't. And I think without the students knowing, and if someone comes in there, then there's no information on where the shooter can target these teachers. Because in this point, if a shooter does come into a school, it's a numbers game. You got 8-1 or 10-1, you know, of these teachers defending these students going against one shooter, because there's usually always one shooter. Sometimes maybe two, but it usually has been one, and they act alone. We don't see a whole lot of these, like, Columbine stuff where it's a planned thing by two students, if not more. So you have the advantage as a teacher that you're armed and you know which ones of you that are armed, so you can try to band together and take out the shooter, because you don't want to hire a security guard like the Parkland shooting and he walks off and like, oh, I thought I heard something in the field when the freaking shooting happened inside the school. Like, how do you justify that at all? And this is a paid security officer? Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, that guy, totally egregious case. I mean...
Yeah. It's messed up.
I guess we can talk about just how screwed up the school system was there.
And the police force. Why don't we get to that? Because you got the freaking sheriff that's like not standing down from his position. This is all under his watch, and he's like, no, I don't, this isn't my problem. Like, well, hell it is.
Yeah, the sheriff, he didn't know what was going on at all. He was totally ignorant.
Yeah.
And he failed completely, and he is totally defiant about it and just blames the NRA. I mean, he's a complete political hack. There's pictures of him with Hillary Clinton. And so it's just amazing. And the guy underneath him is, they brought him in from Chicago, and he's another political guy. I mean, the whole way that they handle the whole situation with him, all the warning signs and everything that were ignored. And then there was this whistleblower that came forward and said, well, we were told not to prosecute people after a certain number of kids have gotten in trouble in a month because we have a maximum amount that,
like,
we can.
Yeah, it's a quota. It's a quota on how many they can arrest. And so if they meet that quota, they just turn them loose. Like, oh, don't do it again. Like, come freaking on. Like,
yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Because they were saying, like, that gangs were recruiting kids to do things, and they would specially wait until they knew how many had been arrested that month, and then they would start doing more crimes after that, because they knew that they could just get away with it and that the kids would not get in trouble. And so this kid, he probably knew about this, and he probably, like, you know, he probably was planning things around, like, when can I do this? These various things and get away with it and not get in trouble so that I can carry this out. And this was they're calling it the Promise Program, because they've always got this nice name to make you lulled into a false sense of security. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, the Patriot Act, or, you know, like, how can you oppose it? You know, it's just so benevolent sounding. Mm-hmm. But this thing is being praised by the NAACP, and they're saying, like, oh, we had all these poor black kids, they didn't do anything wrong, and their lives are just ruined by this permanent record from them getting in trouble in school. And you know, these are kids like J-Kun, you know, people who are potential school shooters, and they're getting off scot-free because there's a quota of how many people that you can arrest in 1 month. That's nuts. Like, this guy, he had been bringing knives and bullets to school, and the teachers were talking amongst themselves, like, don't let this kid bring a backpack because he's going to shoot it up. He was telling everyone he knew he was going to shoot the place up. He posted all over the internet that he was going to shoot the place up. He had been reported to the FBI, that the local police, dozens of times.
Yeah.
Like, the situation is just absolutely insane, and we're so politically correct that we can't do anything about it because the NAACP says it would be racist if you, you know, arrest kids that are criminals. Like, come on. Violent criminals need to be arrested. I think that Trump is a good movement in that direction of actually being tough on crime again, because of just how weak Obama was and how politically correct that he just prioritized all these, like, racial quotas above actual security.
I don't know, I think that was kind of like what I wanted to say about that shooting and I mean, there's more stuff just keeps getting dug up about it, and it's interesting how, like, this is being made into such a big thing, but then when, like, go back to the Las Vegas shooting, like, that was only reported for about a week, and then the mainstream media has not touched it since.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But that one is just weird because nobody knows what happened.
Yes,
like the FBI, they said, like, we're not going to tell anybody for a year. What? Why? Like, what's the reason there? And Alex Jones has this theory. Oh, it's somebody tied to Islam because the girlfriend was from the Islamic world, and that has to do with Saudi Arabia. I don't know. Maybe it's right. Who knows? Like, nobody knows why he did it. Nobody knows how it happened.
Yeah.
It's just totally bizarre. But then Trump banned the bump stock accessory that was.
Or he's in the process of banning it, which the bump stock was made legal under the Obama administration. Go figure there.
Yeah. I mean, Obama, who was supposedly so concerned about this stuff, when did he not even know about this? And there's just some ATF thing going on underneath them that they just approve everything by default and don't think about how it could be used. I don't know.
If we got nothing else to say on this, like, we can always talk about, like, some really good stuff. Like, how Love That Goku came back.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh man, we have a tale to tell for Love That Goku.
Okay, let me see if he's on there recently. Last thing I saw was him tweeting during the Oscars.
Right, and he was trying to advocate for Dragon Ball Z to be elected.
Nominated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was gone for several years, I guess. At least 1 year. And he was on here tonight when we were recording.
Okay.
He says, "I'm thinking about the Majin Buu saga. I am absolutely thrilled to announce that my great aunt Melee passed away in her sleep last night. Me and small Christian too have the entire house to ourselves now. This is what I call cook." I think he means cool. "The passing of my Aunt Melee is a fantastic development. No more distractions, just me and small Christian too under the same roof again, and I shall begin his warrior training ASAP. I shall begin training small Christian too as soon as my ankles have healed from my battle with the very tall tree and my great aunt's just me and small Christian too under the same roof, two bachelors training around the clock now. God, I could get used to that. I shall now get a girlfriend. Tweet me if you want to be my girlfriend."
He's just going to break up with him in an hour. I mean, like, what does it matter? So to try to piece together, he comes back. This is like two weeks ago, right? I think. So basically, he goes to this house to see Christian 2. And he has
Small Christian 2.
And he has this determination to climb the tree. Or to jump off of it or something, and then he winds up falling off and breaking his leg. And he makes all these threats about the tree, how he's gonna knock it down and then walk and then climb it like horizontally or something. Which I think is one of the best quotes he said.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, so then he goes to the hospital and he macks on this nurse while he's waiting. But at the same time, I think it was before he macks on the nurse. He's in the hospital asking for, like, girlfriends on Twitter. So then he gets, like, 9 girls that are want to be his girlfriend. And then an hour later, he breaks up with them. And then he sees this nurse that's married. And he's just like, "No, you're my husband. I don't know who your husband is. He's not a man like me," or whatever. And then as soon as he gets out, he attempts to break his ankle again to go see the nurse, and then he's not seeing the nurse. So it's just that I think that's the abridged version of his story, which is such a good
hospital.
Yeah, so this is the tree saga, and or the tree of might. The tree of might saga. I think that's a fair name to call it.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, he says that. Okay, I scrolled back to when he got back, which was February 11th.
Okay.
This is Christian. "I could not get back into America, so I've been living in the airport. I called my great aunt Melee and said, 'Come get me,' and she said, 'I think you should live at the airport.' This past year has been the lowest point of my life. I cannot watch DBZ Super at the airport or play DBZ Fighters." So he was at the airport for a while.
I mean, God knows how long.
Yeah, for a year, supposedly.
Yeah.
And then he got kicked out, and he ended up back in the shed. And he's at his great aunt Melee's house, and he tried to get in, and then that's when the tree saga happened.
Yeah.
And now great aunt Melee is dead. And it's very suspicious, because whenever somebody has died and left that Goku saga, it usually officially comes out that he's murdered them. And if you haven't listened to our old episodes, this is like a comedy account run by a comedian, so don't get worried. It's not actually happening, but it is hilarious. Just pretend that it's happening.
Yeah, we've talked about Love That Goku in the past, and there's some really good stuff to come out of it. It's very sporadic, so like whatever we get, we can take what we get. So it's just great closing remarks material. But I mean, it's like part of me wants to believe this is real, but at the same time, thank God it's not.
Yeah, yeah. "I dialed the police and said, 'You must drive me to America. I must solve a global crisis,' because he says he's going to destroy the All Right."
Yeah.
"And they came and drove me back to my aunt's instead. 'Never forget to serve and protect' is the biggest lie ever spoke." My aunt put out a missing persons report and said, if you find this boy, do not bring him back here. The Ecuador police force has betrayed both my aunt's wishes and my own. Another setback, but I refuse to quit. There is a time in every young warrior's life when he must go live with his aunt in the shed. I'm going to find the one where he talks about the tree, where he's going to punch it.
Yeah, punch it and then walk up it horizontally. That was just the greatest line.
There's a large tree next to the house. I shall scale the tree and leap onto the roof, whereupon my next move is I'm going to jump into the chimney. He thinks he's Santa Claus jumping on the chimney. I shall rescue small Christian too from the tired, wrinkly clutches of my wicked Aunt Maylie and bring him back to the shed. He will begin his training immediately. It is my nephew's destiny to become a great warrior, the likes of which the world's never seen, besides me. I am in the tree. I fell. I need ambulance, please. I broke my ankles. I will kick the tree over right onto the fucking ground and climb it horizontally. It will rue the day it was ever planted. Anyone who tweets at me saying you will never avenge your loss to the tree, here's what I think. Don't even make me laugh. Oh yeah, this is great to have him back. He was gone for so long, and a year is like a decade in internet time. You know, he was gone for a long time, and the material is still pretty hilarious. And
yeah,
I'm glad he's back. He did a contest also with picture of Goku and Superman fighting.
Yeah,
and he kept saying like how awful all the submissions were, and he ended up choosing his own submission for the for the best submission.
Oh man, I was gonna. I mean, like, if you're done with Chris, love that Goku stuff, I can talk about the con I went to.
Oh yeah,
I must have got all right.
We're pretty far into the episode, and we didn't even talk about the con yet.
Oh man,
let's do that, sure.
All right, so I wound up volunteering for the first year of Atlanta Science Fiction Expo, which is held at the North DeKalb Mall in, outside of Decatur, Georgia, which is outside of Atlanta, or right near Atlanta, and definitely a place I will never want to go back to ever again.
It's that bad.
It's not the worst con I've ever been to, based on when I take everything into account, but like it's pretty low on the list. Yeah, they were so incompetent off the start. Like, you know, on the website they put my name up, like saying like I'm this like you know guest or whatever, panelist, and yeah, there's no name tags, there's nothing like that, because there's no kind of registration. It's a free event, of course, so you get what you pay for. But it was just I was seeing the incompetence. I was like, I am not confident in this con at all. Because, like, they started putting the schedule up. And for the whole week, it was updating. And they never bothered to update mine until, like, the day of the con.
Yeah, you were on the chat each day posting, like, oh, here's what they added. And it would be, like, black characters in science fiction.
Yeah, or, like...
Or, like, LGBT black people, in science fiction.
Yeah, yeah, like, one was, like, anti-blackness in comics was a panel.
Yeah, there were, like, a bunch of things like that.
Yeah.
And then yours was not showing up.
Yeah, I was like, you know, here I am, like, through the Gundam group out of Atlanta. Like, I'm their guest, like, you know, coming from the Greenville group. You know, they kind of represent, and I have a panel idea. And, like, I'm there to do this panel. I'm like, I'm there to, you know, volunteer or whatever. And it almost didn't happen. Because, so let me explain. Like, I went to the mall Friday night to kind of walk around. And, that's when it's attached to a theater. It's like one of those, like, really cheap theaters. So that's when I saw Death Wish, and yeah, that theater was like really nasty because they had like a bunch of popcorn on the floor, and it was mostly like kind of it was mostly like black people that were in there. So like a lot of the violent scenes in that movie, they're all like hooping and hollering for and laughing. Oh, it was shit. Actually it was a really fun time. What's up?
Well, they're just like, oh shit, that's what's going on.
Yeah, 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 pretty much. Yeah, like there was a scene in the movie where it was a great line too when Bruce Willis interrogates this guy by basically having a car hang over him because he's a mechanic and he has it like jacked up on a super high jack. And mm-hmm. So then he gets the answer he wants out of this guy and starts walking off. And then the guy's crawling out of the car and he's just like, oh man, like, oh. He's just like, I thought you were gonna kill me, you know, like, please don't kill me. And then, like, Bruce Willis drags this giant, like, 10-ton chain with him, and he goes, no, I'm not gonna kill you, but Jack is. And then he slings the chain to loosen the jack stand, and the car slams right on the guy, right on his skull, and it explodes in all this, like, gore, and the whole theater flipped out. And I was like, oh, shit! Yeah, but it's the kind of place where, like, basically you go in there and, like, somebody doesn't silence their phone and they keep getting, like, 10 phone calls.
Oh,
and you get
they're,
to
like, talking on the phone the whole time?
I don't know. I just know the phone went off and, like, a lot of that happened from, like, the certain area or whatever. It was, but, like, for me, it was like, you know what? I didn't really pay too much to go see Death Wish, and this was a pretty good movie. But, like, it was a lot of, like, there was, like, a lot of people that laughed at the jokes, even, like, the stuff I laughed at, and... Like, it was, I mean, like, for something that's kind of like a low-end theater, like, I had fun watching the movie. And,
sounds like it was better than your Motel 6 experience, at least.
Oh, my God, I gotta talk about my Motel 6 experience. So.
A's infested bathtub.
Yes! So, I get to Motel 6, and it's like $50 a night, which, if you want something decent and not out of, like, you know, a rat trap, I think you guys gotta pay like 70 or 75 in or above, and I did not do that. But for me, it was like, hey, Motel 6 is like 2 minutes from the mall. That's very convenient for me to do that. But I'll say for Motel 6, you get what you pay for. So I arrive, I get my key, and I go up to my room. It's very convenient above the first one. It was very convenient above like the entrance or whatever. So I was like, all right, this works. And I go in there, and I start putting my stuff down, and I go to the bathroom, and I see this, like, brown, it looks like old vomit or whatever around the tub thing. And I didn't know if that was, like, rust or whatever, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, that's disgusting. And I'm like, well, if it's part of the tub, you can't scrape it off, there's nothing I can do. So then I was like, well, let me run some water on it, and I run water on it, and it just starts moving with the water. And it sounds like
some of the hotels I'd stay at in Turkey, like this level of third world.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, the tub spout, or the spout is completely off, and it looks so gunked up. So, like, I cut the water off, and it just it doesn't even drain at all. And I was like, this is disgusting, I'm getting another hotel room. Or, like, I wanted them to drain it. So, I could, like, because the room was pretty, like, it was small enough for, like, perfect for me. Mm-hmm. And, so I go downstairs. I'm like,
yeah,
hey,
you have to go to a hotel because your friend's mom was staying out there.
And oh, so I couldn't
get a room at the last minute.
Right.
All,
so
I all you get was Motel 6.
So I couldn't stay with my friend for free, because his mom wasn't staying with him because there's a lot of family drama happening, and essentially, yes. Like he had a bunch of family come up. It sounds like they did like an intervention or whatever, and just a lot of stuff happened. It was thrown on him at the last minute, so I blame my Motel 6 stay entirely on his mom, because it's not his fault. But anyways, so I go down and get, so they put me in another room, and it's in the it's on the other end of the hotel, and I'm like, alright, fine, whatever. So I get in there, and it's already got a really funky, humid smell in there, mm-hmm. which I just had to get used to. And it had this, I think the AC unit made it worse because there must be some mold in it or something, I don't know. But the AC unit would be running, and before it shuts off, it makes this loud, demonic rattling sound. So I had to just cut the whole thing off at night and then leave my door cracked so like it could have that stench, that funk air out. I had more space, but I didn't know what to do with it. But, I mean, for a room, it worked. And it's supposed to be a non-smoking room, even though when you walk in there, you clearly smell like it's very musty. And,
I know. Just be body odor.
No, not quite. No. I will say that, the comforter that I had, there were several burnt holes in it from cigarette ashes. Yeah. But I didn't sleep in the comforter. I had the sheets on, so the sheets worked. I checked for bed bugs. There wasn't any. That was like the first thing I checked. And, I was like, all right, this is my place for the next 2 days. And Friday night wasn't too bad because there wasn't a lot of people out there. But Saturday, like that Saturday night when I came back, like from probably 11 to like sometime in the middle of the night, people like to stand outside and talk and cuss each other out. And it's like mostly blacks. So it was a lot of that like ghetto trash that was kind of outside there, which is, again, you get what you pay for. But I hear, like, I've got like a apartment community next to me, so like I'm used to people standing outside and yelling at each other to have a conversation, because it sounds like they're fighting half the time, but they just talk really loud. But
you live in South Carolina, so that's kind of the culture there.
Yeah, that too.
Like yelling at people in the
they have a conversation about something, and you think it's a fight, but it's not. But anyways, I got,
you know, the Great Nation of Wakanda was actually filmed in Atlanta.
Doesn't surprise me one bit.
They just CGI'd it up to make it look like Africa. Like, this is not actually filmed in Africa.
Gosh.
Georgia has all these film incentives to make sure that everybody films there all the time. That's basically made in Georgia all the time on TV. So
yeah, I mean, if it works for them. Let me think. Yeah, it was just a whole lot of yelling. They woke me up several times like that Saturday night, so I didn't sleep very well at that hotel because people would be like out at night like yelling about stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, so like, yeah, the motel, like, it's got a lot of like it needs a huge remodel regarding like all these like cracks in the wood. Like, I was leaving the first room, and like there's like this this awning above me outside the door, and there's like basically pieces of the wood broken off, and someone stuck a bunch of receipts up in there that were just like flapping in the wind, like they're just out, like, you just imagine this outside talking like, oh, I got all these receipts, this is trash, I don't need it, let me just stuff it in the wood and just leave it there.
They'll put it in the trash can. Just stick it in the wood.
Yeah, yeah. Just stick it in the cracks of the wood, because like you're just you don't believe in throwing anything away. I don't know, but my main thing of staying out of Motel 6 is like, I'll get to that. So my main thing at staying at Motel 6 was basically I didn't want my car broken into or if not stolen, and that didn't happen. So I was very fortunate there. I actually wind up being compensated for my stay, so basically I stayed at Motel 6 for free. This relates to the con, where our Gundam group, or the area that we had, that we're going to be doing, we had a bunch of panels signed up. I was the only person out of our Gundam group that got to do panels, and the reason why is because these freaking people that ran the Oculus Rift VR group took all our stuff with them and had it for them all day Saturday. And it's supposed to be a shared projector or whatever. We didn't get that crap back at all. The con was so poorly ran. We did get our stuff back Sunday. I actually had it. We had everything set up first because the guy that brought me down, like, he felt bad that I came all this way and I didn't do my panel. So he wound up compensating for my stay, which is great. Like, the people in the group, like, treated me very well. Like, I was an actual guest. Like, I didn't pay for any meal. I had somebody I met from the old school otaku forums meet me because he lives in Atlanta. He actually like helps run Suishin Con, which is a con out of Atlanta. And we got to meet up that Sunday night, so he took me to this awesome pizza place, and he paid for my meal too, which was great. And so Sunday comes around, and so like we get all our we get like a, the guy that helps like you know help me get set up, come in there, wheels all this technical stuff with me. So, like, you know, we're getting the projector set up. We took, like, the power cord from where the VR guys were. Like, this is our area. This is what we're going to use. No issues. So then one of the guys from the VR place shows up, and he's just, like, asking about where his two Oculus Rift headsets were. And he believed that the white box came with the cart with all his computer stuff. And I was like, no, dude, what you see here is everything that came with it that I got.
And then he started accusing me of stealing it.
Yeah, he thought we were stealing it or something. And then, like, he was getting all pissed off about it. So then he brings one of the guys that runs the con over there to have this discussion. And then he starts bitching about how, like, we moved the power cord and crap. And I was under the impression, like, we're the ones doing the panels in this room because this is supposed to be our stuff. That's what I was told from the guy that, you know, brought me, wanted me to come to this con. And so then he shows me, like, the guy that runs the con is showing me his own schedule that he put together. And like, this is a shared panel thing. And I said, well, yeah, because we're the ones doing the panels. Like, it's all on the schedule right there. And he comes with some BS reason about, like, well, no, it's a community thing. I'm like, fine, whatever. I'm trying to run this panel anyways. All I need is my iPad and, like, you know, the speaker set. And it's so small, I don't need a mic. So anyways, like, this is why karma works so well in my favor is that, before my panel started, we were, like, gonna ask about getting the projector back. So we go over to the VR guys because they finally found their stuff, which was in a trash bag where they left it in the first place. Which, if it's so important to you, why in the hell did you leave it in charge of the con staff and not take it home with you? That doesn't make any freaking sense at all. But anyways.
Yeah, it was really valuable to them, which is why it ended up in a trash bag.
Yeah, really. I mean, go freaking figure. So, anyways, like, we go over there to get the projector. Like, hey, like, they were nice by then because they had their stuff. And I'm like, hey, you guys done with the projector and the screen? We kind of need it next, like, in the next few minutes. And the guy's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. Our computer just, like, blue screened to death, so we can't do anything with it. And I'm like, all right, we'll take this off your hands. Thank you so much. And I'm just like,
payback's a motherfucker, ain't it? Nigga.
And, yeah, so I did the panel, and it went pretty great. Like, I actually had people come over, like, as I was speaking. Like, I had maybe 10 or 12 people, which is what I probably expected. But, like, there was people that, like, kind of walked over, like, hey, what's this guy talking about? So I did a pretty good job talking about my panel on Gundam in America, like a brief history about it. So I got to show video clips. I used a lot of screen caps, and kind of made, like, a like a PowerPoint presentation through Adobe Premiere, where I just had, like, a big timeline screen, and I just kind of, like, put images with the timeline that I had to kind of explain things and just pause the video and talk about it. So I had some video clips, including, Toonami promos for, like, Char's Counterattack, Gundam Wing, model kit commercials we had, and I decided to show, some scenes from the Gundam movies that were dubbed to show, like, how funny that dub was. Like, and I even had the scene where, Sailor meets Char, and Char's voiced by, Steve Bloom at the time. Which worked pretty well. And then I got to show the entirety of Doozy Bots all over again. I'm like, hey, this would have been Gundam in America if this got approved. be very grateful for that.
Did it seem like they were enjoying the Doozy Bots?
Oh, yes. We had a blast with Doozy Bots, I will say. Even with the clips, like, with the Gundam movie clips that I showed, like, it's a scene where Frau's family gets killed, and in the dub, like, Frau's just like, I see them, they're all dead, and then Amuro goes, who do you see? And the camera's clearly pinning on, like, 50 dead bodies right in front of them. And I'm like, and everyone just starts busting out laughing at how ridiculous that dub line is, and I'm like, yeah, this is the savior of the Federation right here, who can't see freaking dead bodies in front of him. It's great. It was just how well delivered that line was for dramatic effect, but it just comes off so cheesy, and I just love it.
Was it like a different line in the Japanese version?
Maybe. I have no idea.
It's not like Tamino dialogue is all that great to begin with.
Yeah, I think they might have been following the Tamino dialogue very well, where, like, Tamino's like, well, that's just for dramatic effect if you ask who's the dead people that you just saw explode right in freaking in front of you. But my issues with the convention itself is because it was held in a mall. It had a lot of open space. Like, I even took video of the gaming room that we were in, which is in an abandoned Ross. And a Ross is a discount store, of course. It's just like they had tables spread out too far, where people had to walk too far to get the stuff. I think you could have had half the convention in that Ross building. And because, so, so the vendors and the guests that had like art, the artist alley, they were in the food court of the mall in the front. Or, and actually in the back of the mall, technically. And the, it's, and, to, the guy who showed up who got to meet me from the forum, Drew Sutton, was just like, wow, that's the busiest I've ever seen that food court whenever I come to this mall. And the food court is so depressing because, like, most of the stores are closed there. Like, there used to be a Wendy's. There used to be, like, five other places. The only thing that's open there is, like, some ice cream place and, like, an Asian place. And I think probably, like a sandwich shop. I have no idea. The Asian place actually wasn't too bad food quality-wise. But, yeah, it's really pathetic looking mall. But it's just like, they had like the food court like in the front. But in order to get to where we were and this other panel stage where they had a bunch of like maid cafe dancers singing Japanese music, you had to walk all the way around to like go to the other side of the mall to get to like the gaming area, some other panels. It was just way too spread out. I didn't know where I had to go that Saturday. Until, like, I was walking and I heard this Japanese music playing. I'm like, who the hell is playing Japanese music in a mall like this? And then I see, like, four white girls dressed up as maids on a stage dancing with Japanese music. I'm like, okay, I'm heading in the right direction. And it's in front of a freaking clock tower in the middle of this square or whatever. It's something. It was a view to behold. And then right next to that is the gaming area, which was the abandoned Ross that I had to go to. And if for some reason, it was whoever, wanted to set up the Gundam area. They decided to set up the Gundam area and the loading bay of the Ross store. And there was a narrow doorway to get back there with all our Gundam stuff. And it just was so out of place. So eventually that Saturday, someone from the con staff was like, you guys want to move out here so that everybody can see you instead of dipping into this like random like back room or whatever. And I was like, yeah, why not? That would make perfect sense.
This place can't have been getting too much business if they've got it run like,
but it gets better. So like, next to where we were, there was the bathrooms in the fitting area. So like, I got curious and decided to check out the women's fitting area, which is littered with tabs off clothes that just left on the floor. Like, no one bothered to clean that up. I was like back there like, you know, did anything, like anybody leave any clothing back here or whatever? Like, I didn't know what to expect. But, like, there was just stalls full of just, like, clothing tags just stacked up high. And I'm like, they literally, like, when they moved out, they literally just pushed everything in the back of the dressing rooms and just did not give a damn. It was something.
This whole episode is like an advertisement of...
Oh, you're kind of cutting in and out. Try to say it again.
It seems like the whole moral of this story is this is a con that our listeners should not go to.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I would never advise anybody. This is their first year. I don't know if it's going to happen again next year. It was run by, like, the hobby shop in the mall, like this collectible car place or whatever. And, I mean, if they're going to do this again, they got to do it, like, they got to have everything together where people can, like, easily walk around and have access to stuff because it was just, my biggest thing is just way too much open space. Like, it was ridiculous to get to, like, somebody talking about something. Like, no one's going to bother to walk over there. Why should they care? So for me, like, I set up our panel area right next to our Gundam stuff, so then it was totally related. So people wanted to see the Gundam stuff, and they knew to go where the Gundam thing was, and they see this big screen, like, oh, there's the guy talking. Makes perfect sense. Like, no, these people clearly do not know how a convention should be run, or take anything. I don't know if they've ever been to a convention before. It clearly shows.
Some people thought a convention sounds like a good idea, but they didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, Daff says, like, he goes to these, like, abandoned JCPenney cons or whatever, but at least in a JCPenney, if it's in a JCPenney, it's all condensed in one area. You don't have to go to the other side of the mall to go to a panel. Well, who's gonna heck is gonna walk over there? It's way too much effort.
Yeah, Daff, he went to some con and he's, I guess he was on, like, a couple hours ago, 3 hours ago. Saying he wanted to come on and talk about it, but when he was talking to me on Slack about it, I'll just read off some of his comments, but it sounded like it was really bad. He said they still had address info for their old location, and that it was ineptly run, and just super shitty, he said. Less than 750 people. So it sounds like this was just another one of these trash cons that he goes to, and probably not all that interesting.
I think we had maybe more than 50 people. I'm pretty sure we had more. I mean, if you include the attendees, and I mean, this was a free event, and the attendees and the people that were there, we probably had a couple hundred people total at this convention. So it did better than this trash con in New England that Daff went to.
Yeah.
I mean, if 50 people showed up to this con, and I had 10 people on my panel, that means, like, theoretically, I had one-fifth of that attendance, like, to one panel, which is astounding. But, like, these other people were running panels, and I remember, like, looking. They ran panels in, like, in other abandoned stores, and, like, they had, like, a pretty look. Like, looks like they had a pretty good sizable amount of people that showed up. So, like, to hear whoever talking about, like, cosplay ideas or whatever the heck, but... No, this con was ill-prepared for the amount of, like, technical material they needed. And they shafted us completely because, like, they'd rather give it to these other guests. I'm like, well, why didn't you put me... It's just a mess. Like, if I had any other panel room, I probably would have done fine, but I didn't. So then we had a fight to do panels. And again, I was the only one to do a Gundam panel because the other people that were supposed to do theirs, we didn't have the material to do it. So then they just kind of forgot and gave up, and nobody was, like, determined to do their stuff. So it Yeah, I was like, look, I'm here to do a panel. I'm registered on the schedule. It's going to get done. This is stupid. So, like, they feel bad for me. Like, yeah, this guy came all the way out of his way, 2.5 hours to do, like, go to be part of a con and volunteer and hang out with us, and, like, we're screwing him over. So, like, that's not right. So, like, I will not do this. Yeah, we'll never go back to Atlanta Sci-Fi Expo ever again. I mean, I don't know what they're going to change, but I'm not that impressed. So, we'll see. I'd rather help out with Drew Sutton's Suition Con and be a panel submission there. I don't know, but
A lot of cons that just happen one time and never again.
I have a feeling this might be that. They're going to realize how hard it was, how it took too much effort than they thought, and it wasn't as easy as they thought. And they're just like, well, this isn't worth our time for a con that we charge no admission for. We have all this space that we could have used, and if they used it well, it would have worked out a whole lot better, and they didn't do it that way, so... But, yeah, so that's my con review of Atlanta Sci-Fi Expo. And if you go, I don't know. Like, hopefully they do a better job next year. If there is a next year, there might not be. I don't know. But I took it as they've been doing this con for a couple of years. But then I find out you get there and they're like, oh, no, this is their first year. I'm like, oh, well, this definitely shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I mean, but in terms of, like, me meeting with people, like, I mean, I got to go with, like, this nerd bar north of Atlanta called Battle and Brew, which was actually really – that was pretty fun. There was, like, a MAME arcade in the front of the bar. so, like, me and some guys got to play, like, some Shin Chan arcade game, which made no sense. And then this other guy took over my spot, so then, like, the two guys were playing this Mazinger Z arcade game, which actually the level started recycling. And they were like, I don't think there's any way to beat this game, so then we just kind of gave up on that. I had fun just, like, the fun part of it was just meeting people and discussing things and, you know, our plans in our lives, getting to know each other, that communion and fellowship, and that really made up, like, the suck part of, like, what I had to deal with. Which, the suck part of it is just, like, I got to do my panel, so it came out okay. And I was like, you know, I'm not gonna complain too bad, and, like, people showed up for it and were interested. And the Motel 6, you know, like, I that's a lesson learned. I'm like, I should have known better, but, like, I could have went somewhere else and paid extra, but I was like, I'd rather do cheap. But then I want to be compensated, so I was free in the end. So, like, a good amount of good came out of this. So I can't really complain too much on that, other than just my issues with this convention being run, and it clearly showed, so.
Yeah, I guess it could have been worse.
Yes, it could have. I'm glad it wasn't, so.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it for my my convention review. Unless you got something else you wanted to add or whatever.
Not really. I guess I could talk for a second about Black Lightning, which I guess DC's answer to Black Panther.
All right.
They tried to put this on the CW. It's exceptionally bad, as is often the case with CW shows. But this one I think is worse than the others even.
Even though you still keep watching it.
Yeah, right. In the most recent episode, they had a blatantly ripped from the headline story about Charlottesville, where the main character, Black Lightning, he has two daughters, and they're starting to develop superpowers, and one of them uses their super strength to destroy the statue of Robert E. Lee after protest becomes violent because a white supremacist drives over someone with a car and kills them.
Oh my gosh.
That was just amazing to me that they would take just such a blatantly ripped from the headlines story like that and change nothing other than just the name and the age of the victim. And the answer is apparently just, I don't know what the moral is here, just destroy stuff and then everything will be better. Like, to be honest, Black Panther, when you compare it to stuff like Black Lightning, it seems very good.
Yeah.
it's not a great movie, but, you know, compared to the kind of crap that's on television, and
yeah,
it's hard to be much worse than Black Lightning.
I feel the
stunts are very bad, the acting is very bad, the music is insufferable, it's just awful.
And you don't think this is going to last more than a season?
Well, Josh, I've been talking with him about, is this going to last another season? Are they going to try to tie it in with the other shows? What's going to happen? And he says like they almost always get second seasons on the CW unless they do very, very badly. And that this is probably going to get multiple seasons. And they're probably going
to
draw it into crossovers and stuff. But I don't know. It seems like the ratings have been going down pretty quickly, pretty bad. Maybe it will fade away.
Why do they keep getting shows being made? Like, gosh, if they're this bad and the ratings are this low, they just keep pumping out more stuff and coming up with other superheroes. Like there's
they have too many.
Yeah, there's no way they'll do like a Lobo show on CW. Like that might be the only thing I'd watch. I mean, like either Lobo or Cable. Like those are the only. If they made a series on those characters, like I definitely would watch those. But
how far did you make it on the Punisher show?
Two episodes, but even the Punisher show was like pretty well done.
Yeah, I thought it was good. On the whole gun control issue, they had an interesting take on it. There was this liberal politician in there that was trying to ban guns, and Karen Page was doing an interview with him, and she asked him like, "Well, don't you think you're a little bit hypocritical because you have armed security here protecting you from this shooter that's out to kill you because of your views here?" And it was just kind of amazing because that's something that you almost never see mentioned by the media, even though it's true that, you know, politicians that advocate for gun control, they always have Secret Service, armed security around them. They acknowledge that guns are useful for their self-defense. They just don't believe that ordinary Americans should be able to do the same thing.
Right.
So I thought that was like that, something you don't usually see in a Hollywood production to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was surprising to me. And I mean, I guess there was a lot of interesting stuff in there dealing with people with post-traumatic stress disorder and issues like that. And,
yeah.
And so I thought that was a well done show. I generally am not a huge fan of the Marvel Netflix stuff, but I think that one was actually really good.
Okay. I haven't finished Punisher. I mean, like, Walking Dead just started back, so that's going to be my show to watch for the next 8 weeks.
We don't have JT around anymore to go on there and say, "Oh my god, he just got eaten. I can't believe they did that."
Oh, I wonder if he's well, spoiler alert for Walking Dead is the fact that the kid Carl died finally. And I wonder how JT's taking that, because like honestly, like the past couple seasons, like Carl's been kind of useless. I mean, he's done things here and there, like he was like in like a season ago or whatever. He was in Negan's camp and, like, you know, like took out a bunch of guys and he seemed pretty badass about it. But, you know, this past, like, since then, like, he hasn't really done much. And they try to draw this whole dramatic thing about, like, oh, we're going to miss you or whatever. When, like, other characters I like, they instantly wrote him off. And this one, they try to, like, highly dramatize it up. And I'm like, gosh, just get this over with. And so, yeah, I was like, all right, well, you know, Carl's gone, whatever. I don't really care. Because he just seemed like such
a... I'm sure he would have a reaction if he was on there, but... For whatever reason, he's no longer amongst us.
Yeah. But,
I'm not sure which characters he liked or didn't like, but, he was very opinionated about all that, like, who he thought should die.
Yeah, I mean, there was other characters I really liked that they just, like, instantly, like, cheaply wrote off, and I was like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. But, whatever. Yeah, I mean, like, I'll eventually like to get back into maybe watching more Punisher whenever I can. We'll see about that, but, I need to catch up on, Toonami shows that I need to watch from last week and then some from the week before. I haven't had a chance to finish it up from last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know, like, I got back to the hotel. I could have watched JoJo's, but I was like, well, I'm recording this at home, so I'd rather just, like, watch it when I get back.
Oh, it's really funny.
Yeah, I heard it was, like, the Oingo Boingo episode, but I know nothing about it, so I'll find out when I watch it, either, like, tomorrow or whatever.
They had this hilarious censorship where they changed the names to Zenyatta and Mondatta, but they showed Oingo Boingo on the comic.
Yeah.
And... they had the ending theme song where they kept saying Oingo Boingo in Japanese.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, but it was obviously what they were saying, even though it was just English. But
yeah.
I just thought it was hilarious that they wouldn't include that in the dump dialogue, even though it was everywhere else and it was obvious what the characters were
We got anything else we want to talk?
Did you see the Hot Springs episode of Alistar?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That honestly wasn't as bad as I thought. I thought it was a fun episode.
Yeah, it was not even allowed to air when Toonami originally aired.
I could see why. That's way too much censorship to do.
Yeah. There was the famous Pokemon episode that got banned, the Beauty and the Beach, where James has the inflatable breasts.
Yes, I know about that.
And then it eventually aired, but with heavy editing. But, you know, Pokemon was such a moneymaker that they wanted to get out every episode that they could.
Yeah.
And even with the editing, they still ended up only airing it, I think, twice, and then it never aired again. It's not on the DVDs or anything. And I have, like, a taping of it from when it first aired on Kids to UV.
Oh, wow.
But it's something that was, you know, a very rare episode. And I guess with the LSR, it was not popular enough for them to go through all the effort of making all the edits they would have to do to make that palatable.
Right.
Too much fan service. And,
yeah, I mean, they
did this time was they blurred Asia's nipples in like one shot, and that was all they had to do.
It was
do almost anything.
It was kind of like they seemed like they did a good job blurring the nipples out. Like I was like, wow, those are really round and smooth. Like I think those are, you know, faded out. I have no idea. Like does Asia does have nipples? Like I can't tell, but I mean it worked. Yeah. So.
Sometimes they don't even draw that on anime characters, so it's ambiguous. You know, they kind of just put, like, brown paint on top of them to make it look like her skin color, and yeah. Cowboy Bebop is, like, All-Star been aired almost uncut in HD, and there was only the scene with I think it's Jupiter Jazz at the end of part one. They had to blurt some nipples, but
Are you talking about the HD stuff that they're doing now on TV? They blurred out the nipples. Okay, because the standard definition ones, they basically did like a crop and zoom of that scene when Grimm's coming out of the shower, where you just see like the head. Because that's like on the tapings I had, that's like you can definitely I can tell that now where like they basically like zoomed in closer, so like the quality's a little grainy.
Uh huh.
So that's what they did back then with the standard definition versions, but with this one, you're like, oh, they just brought out the nipples. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and it makes more sense this way, because now you can tell, like, oh, Wifei is confused. She's
yes.
doesn't know what gender they are. Nowadays, you couldn't even do a scene like that, because it would be considered transphobic.
Okay.
Like, how could you consider this is not normal? How could you be surprised by someone
having... Oh, no, yeah, there's, male, yeah, transphobic stuff, that wasn't even a term when they aired Bebop 15 years ago. Like, none of that stuff existed. No, that wasn't even, right. like, terms anybody said.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's definitely a new innovation in language.
Yep.
And we're probably going to do more discussion on Bebop and Alistar in, like, a future episode, because we were kind of talking about, like, maybe doing a retrospective on those shows.
Yes.
In a month or two.
Yeah, well, I mean... The 20th episode or 20th anniversary of Bebop is coming up next month when it first aired in Japan. So I'd like to do like a 20th anniversary episode to cover Bebop, which may or may not be our next episode. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I would love to go back and just talk about that show and like how much it meant to me and our favorite episodes, least favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. I can kind of go through like episode synopsis and just look through some stuff. And then once Outlaw Star finishes up, then we can review Outlaw Star too.
Yeah, Outlaw Star actually is going to end 2 weeks before Bebop, and
okay,
there's four episodes left to air of Bebop and two left to air of Outlaw Star. So they're both almost done, and they're very beautiful in HD. They're great remasters, so very cool to see them again. And I mean, these are classics of Toonami and Adult Swim. I'm glad they're still around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they brought a lot of people into, you know, more serious anime type shows. Showed a lot of what you could do with characters that hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
You know, just I'm sure we've got a lot more to say about that in a future episode.
Gotcha. Yeah. So whenever this comes out, it will come out like in March, because we're recording this like it was March 5th when we started, so now it's March 6th because we record so late at night. And geez, it's almost 1 a.m. for me.
So, it's about to become March 6th for me in 30 seconds.
Yeah. anyway, so I'll try to get this out like in the next week or so, or maybe by next week, and then that'll be it. Like, now we're down to like a once a month format. And I'm just like, I just had so much going on, or like, I'm just like, oh, I don't really feel like recording, but we put out like two hour episodes. We've got plenty of content out there. So, I think we're doing okay. But yeah, so this is going to be,
how long is this episode?
I'm at 216 now.
Okay, cool.
So that's a pretty good sized length episode right there. I mean, we've been on closing remarks since, an hour and 16 minutes ago.
Did you want to bring up that Chris Chan documentary that you watched or anything? Or
no? Oh, I haven't seen it yet. Well, it hasn't finished yet, but there's a guy that's done a Chris Chan documentary, but he's splitting it up in parts. So far, part three has come out as of this recording, and I think part four might come out this weekend. I don't know. But this guy is, so far between three parts, he's done about an hour and a half worth of work. I have no idea how many more parts are going to come, but if everything's completed, it's going to be a really long documentary to watch, like in one, like in if you were to watch it like, you know, back to back or each episode together, which I think it's good that it's split up in these 30-minute or 40-minute episodes that this guy's doing.
How far has he gotten?
He's at part three so far, but in terms of the
in terms of his life events.
Let me think. He talked, I don't think he's gotten into, he's gotten into like how Chris was at Game Place as a Pokemon trainer. I think he's about to get into the Megan Schroeder arc.
Oh, that's unbelievable. That's so early.
Yeah.
Like that's when like people were first finding about Chris like 10 years ago.
Well, he's getting into Megan now, and then he started talking about like Chris with starting with Sonichu. So it's in the early issues of Sonichu. He's talked about like what happened in those.
This thing is going to be really long, man. There's so much more that's happened since then.
I know. But this guy's doing like a pretty good, like he's making something that I am just engrossed in knowing, like, cause he tells such a really good story and going over just the facts over it. And, he hasn't gotten to the point where like, I don't know if he's gotten to the point yet about, the man in the, no, he hasn't gotten to the point where the man in the pickle suit has shown up. So that hasn't happened yet, but I think it's been mentioned, or at least like with Chris disliking pickles. Because there's footage of that existing out there, so he hasn't shown it yet, I don't think. But, he's talking about Chris's like early bannings from the mall.
Oh yeah. So the attraction sign.
Yeah, he graduated from, PVCC, with his drafting degree or certificate or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's gotten as far as that. He, as far as I know, like he was basically talking about like Chris wanting Santa to give him a girlfriend. So it's around that timeline there, roughly.
I remember that. There's like a video of him filming his Christmas, and he made Bob read
his
letter.
Yes.
Oh my god, that was horrible.
Yes, and
it was like a letter about how he needs Santa's best wishes for the love quest or something.
Yeah, and if Dad gets his half-hearted, it'll happen, Chris.
Yeah,
like just wait, be patient, Chris. Whenever that'll come, so. Yeah, it was so awkward. And then, like, the guy's narrating, like, how, like, they act towards Chris and how... So it just adds on that layer of awkwardness even more with the narration to it. So it's some really good stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, when I'm seeing all this stuff in depth, it's more interesting for me to be engrossed because then I'm like, oh. So, because I've always been, like, how stuff happened when and where with Chris Chan from what I know. Mm-hmm. But now this is, like, really placing it in a correct order.
Does he talk about the part where Bob paid the school to encourage girls to be friends with Chris?
Yes, he brought up, I think that was in part two, where he brought up Chris's gal pals. Uh-huh. And how he was attracted to one of them, but it didn't work. And he had that neighbor girl of his that came over the first time, and he made like a comic for her or something. And he made a comic for her again the second time, but then she never came over. And then the comics, he basically writes in her boyfriend for like taking her away from him or whatever.
Oh, Wes Israeli or whatever.
Wes Isley or whatever. That. Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's 1 a.m. I need to shut this down.
All right.
Thank you, listeners, for another great episode by us. If you made it this far through closing remarks, tune in next time where we will probably review Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star or maybe something else. But until then, have a great day and whatnot, and I'm just going to end it here. Bye!
Eclectic Matin.
George Washington, baby! Wait till I liberal everybody! George Washington, baby!
Well, I tell you what, get ready!
George Washington, baby!
You laughed at me,
baby.
Well, they do put chemicals in the water to brain damage you and your family.
Get the drugs ready. Hardcore super feminist, high off Satanist, pesky Muslim extremist, communist, crony capitalist. It's over for the globalist. Racist, he's Barack H. Obama. His religion is hating America. Family out of Kenya. He's a top genital mutilation pusher.
Oh, we'll have lots of blood and semen.
God, don't put that in the water. It's deadly poison.
Get back. They're going to blow up 7.
They're going to release a really specific bioweapon.
Some of the computers will make the decision.
They show mutated dead children. Half the kids on your block with autism. Psychological warfare systems.
Come on.
Hey.
Come on.
Hey.
Pentagon tested gay bomb.
It's the gay bomb.
Come on, Bob.